Amidst the uproar over poor pixel smoothing, Square Enix announces that graphic style will soon become a choice for Chrono Trigger. This is just one story in a night full of news. Welcome back to a regularly scheduled and live episode of the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
We are live once again, and welcome back to another episode of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight, episode number 725 for this April the 8th of 2018. My name is Rob Roberts. You might know me on Twitter at Sky, S-K-I-E, and I'm joined, as always, to talk about video games with the one and only Dark Sakura, or Jamie
Mr.
Summers.
Mr. Smush made the best noise.
He
yawned, but it sounded like a snort, so he went, ah!
He makes these little... Mr. Smush is the resident cat, by the way, if you didn't know. He's my son. He's my three-year-old baby. He makes little noises like a piggy because he has the smush face. That's actually not why he's called Mr. Smush. It helps. But I called him Mr. Smush because... Okay, Sanrio, our old cat who passed, when you would like pet her and she really loved you, she would lick. She'd go, lick, lick, lick. She'd lick your fingers. Mr. Smush, what he does, if he loves you and you put your hand out, he'll just ram his whole face into your
Linda
hand.
Linda does that too.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, he's a smushing kitty. So I called him Mr. Smush.
You know, every cat, though, that my friends have, I give a nickname to.
Do you?
He's Smushy.
Smushy? It's derivative.
My friend Susan's cat, Pantera, not after the band, but because it means panther.
Okay, I still like Pantera after the band.
Well, her nickname is Miss Pants.
Okay.
Sanrio I called Sanchan, or Old Lady.
Mm-hmm. Old Lady. That's a good one. But anyway, I want to say what was hilarious about it is right when the show music starts, Mr. Smush comes in here and plops up on which is usually our guest chair, this very old chair I've had in my family for a long time. He plops up on the chair. All he needs is a microphone. I guess we could give him one. Should I give Mr. Smush a microphone?
I was just thinking it was his regal throne.
Would you all be bothered by random cat noises if I give Mr. Smush a microphone? There we go.
I wouldn't be.
Mr. Smush, if you have anything to say, you just say it right into that microphone.
Unless
okay?
he pulls, you know, cat assholeness and knocks it down.
Yeah, he's going to knock it down. When you guys hear that big thud later on.
That's Mr. Smush.
That's Mr. Smush peacing out.
That's his opinion.
All right. Hey, speaking of opinions, say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm having spicy salsa.
I'm sorry.
So my tongue's on fire. But it's so much better than the Pico, so.
All right. You
better
need
to have your tongue on fire than your ass on fire.
This is true.
I felt like you were trying to get a thought out there. I hopped over to Loki.
Just random observation. I noticed that you have taken your arcade cabinets out of the boxes.
Okay, yes. Let's talk about that. So my little arcade cabinet collection, which really is Jamie's, like, helped me build this significantly because she found these little – they're called arcade minis, and they're available – but they're only available –
Lame Dan.
They're only available at Walmart and I think Amazon.
Walmart.
But – Jamie saw them all at Walmart, so she was, you know, texted me like, "Do you want them?" I'm like, "Heck yeah!" So she got me five of these seven machines that are up here, and so I have these tiny little mini arcade cabinets with Pac-Man, Centipede, Rampage, Joust, Q-Bert, Frogger, and Asteroids.
So there's a story behind this, though.
Yeah, go for it.
Dan took me to four different WalMarts looking for these fuckers, and I was like, "I don't want to go to Walmart. I don't want to go to Walmart." So. As I'm driving home, there's a Walmart that Dan hasn't been to because he doesn't really have a reason to. So I just stopped randomly because you can buy fabric. And I was looking at the crafty stuff, but they had them. Mm-hmm. So that's when I texted you and I told Dan that they had them. So I bought the first two of the LCD screens. I didn't get the crappy screens, which I want to say was Q-Bert and Centipede.
Yeah, I think those were the first two you got me. Yeah.
Which is funny because we'd kind of been on a Q-Bert kick.
Yeah.
And then...
And honestly, of those machines, here's the thing. Even though they're all in the same collection or whatever, like there's...
They're all emulated.
Well, sort of. See, here's the thing. The early Pac-Man and Space Invaders were the first two in the collection. They're not that great. They're basically Game & Watches.
Yeah.
Okay? Meaning they have the burned in... You know, LED thing, like, or LCD.
LCD.
Yeah. LCD, where it's already, like, burned in and stuff. So it's like Mr. Game & Watch.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what it looks like. And they're not very good. And then the new Pac-Man and Asteroids, kind of the same thing.
Just
they're
a
also
color version of
just
them.
A color version of Pac-Man. So they're also not very good. But the other ones, I only got those for completion's sake. The other ones, like Joust and Q-Bert and Rampage, they all use like little emulated, like either like ColecoVision or Atari. I don't know what
the
versions.
The version of Q-Bert, actually, if I am correct, it is a modified version of the ColecoVision version.
I want to see if the noise will actually come through on the mic. I don't know how well this will be.
Barely.
It's loading, loading, loading. It doesn't really have the music, which is the crappy part.
Yeah.
That was him cursing because I got hit. Yeah. Anyway, there you go. A little taste of Q-Bert. Sorry, I thought that had music in it. I guess not. Well, so it must be an old version.
Yeah, if I remember... Well, I mean, believe it or not, I still have my ColecoVision. And we've played Q-Bert on it a couple of times. And it has like a little bit of the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, mm-hmm. you know? So it does have a little bit of music. But that's why I think that this one's a modified version.
Yeah.
Because Q-Bert actually looks right. He doesn't have the vacant eyes.
Right. And Dr. Tatsuya says, I want to see Q-Bert as Konami's NES version. No, the NES version had that little introduction at the level. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
I did not care for the... And actually, if you want to see a really good comparison, though, for versions of Q-Bert,
mm-hmm.
one of my favorite channels is I think it's like Retro Wave, but he does Battle of the Ports.
Mm-hmm.
And he did every home release and arcade release of Q-Bert side by side. And it's a really good comparison. I really enjoy this guy's commentary.
SSJ100 Matt says, I saw these things and was considering getting one. Honestly, they're not bad. I mean, they're kind of hard to play. I think if I was a younger kid, I would be super, like... Your kids, Loki, I would think would be super into this because the little joystick for the little hands.
Like anything like that.
Yeah. But for me, they're really hard to play. And I don't think the Pac-Man and Asteroids are very good, like I said a minute ago. But the others are, I mean, because they are like little tiny displays, little mini color TVs. Well, they work good.
I did hook up the arcade cabinet again this week because
uh-huh.
I moved it to the other side of the garage, plugged it in, and hooked the computer back up to it. Problem is I get no display on it now. Which I'm not surprised because the way they built it, since it is an arcade machine, normally you have the boards like screwed down to an actual piece of wood that slides in and out of the cabinet, so it's easy to kind of put it in there. But the graphics card that I have is just kind of there's nothing really holding it into the board, and it just kind of wobbles around in there. So I did try to brace it up with some brackets, but it never was in there very well, and I think something broke there. Like, and it's a really old graphics card, too, that may have broken, so I have to test it on another monitor first to make sure it's actually working. And it may just be simply just replacing the graphics card, which I have dozens of them in my garage. that won't be a problem. It's just, you know, and I can actually replace it with a better graphics card. I was hoping I wouldn't have to do that because everything was already set up and nice. It's
right.
Just, you know, whatever.
Anyway, I'm looking at our chat over at live.vognetwork.com. Raginator says, if I recall correctly, the first arcade game that I ever played was Popeye. That's a great throwback game. People forget about Popeye, I think, from the 80s. That was a great... Nintendo did the arcade cabs for that, too, if I remember
right.
I
had the Coleco version.
Yeah, that was a great like little 80s platformer that kind of disappeared with time, because of the license.
Though, because of with contemporaries, though, I still preferred Kangaroo over Popeye.
I was still a Popeye fan, but that's because of my Commodore 64 connection, because that's one of the earliest things I remember playing on Commodore 64 was Popeye. Mm. It was a Parker Brothers C64 cartridge. They had a very unique shape.
But my first arcade game, I want to say, was Pac-Man, because I have a vague memory of being three and being held up by my mom's boyfriend to play it.
I want to say I have these two conflicting memories. I'm not sure which one was first. I remember playing...
My mic wasn't on, I think.
No, you were fine.
Okay.
It was either Tempest at a young age. I remember playing Tempest at a very young age with the little dial that spins, right? That's on. And then also another unique controller. I have a distinct remember of being at a Chuck E. Cheese in the 80s when my sister got married. I would have been like 4 or 5 years old. And I remember playing Crystal Castles. So yeah. I remember that being one of the earliest games that I played in the arcade. So... Actually, I like that we're bringing up old arcade games. And by the way, a proper shout out to our chat room, because of course we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice Geeks Network of VogNetwork.com, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. And let me just say, it is great to be back tonight after essentially 3 weeks, because we were gone 2 weeks ago because I was out at Bobby Blackwolf's wedding, and then last week was Easter, which I hope you guys had a great day.
Got a little sunburned.
Yeah,
I heard. We raised a lot of money for a charity.
Congrats.
And I got to meet all kinds of sisters.
Good.
Including one of my inspirations, Sister Baronce.
Oh, I know Sister Baronce. You met Roma, right?
I
love Roma. Sister Roma because of the Facebook campaign. I thanked her for that when
Sister
I met her.
Roma is actually the first sister I ever met in 2006 at the Castro Street Fair.
And for those that don't know, just a quick background, Jamie's part of this organization, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Honestly, the easiest way I can explain it to the broad audience that listens to this show, what's that?
Drag nun.
Yeah, basically, if you've ever seen dudes dressed as nuns, although not only dudes, right, Arsara? If you've seen dudes dressed as nuns, it was probably them.
Yep, been around since the 70s.
So, cool.
But
and Sister Rome is one of the most famous because of the Facebook campaign where, you know, you should not have to use your real name, which I don't use my real name on Facebook, and I shouldn't have to.
But if you go look on the World of Wonder YouTube channel, you can find Sister Roma and Sister Baronce doing Besties for Cash. No.
But how else will they be able to get accurate information for all their analytics that they're leaking to the world?
I know, right? Right about now, I'm real happy I used a fake name. Thanks. But anyway, not to distract. What were you going to mention before the Easter thing? Do you remember?
I guess not.
Okay, that's okay.
It was something that would have been important, but I forgot.
Let me quickly read a couple more memories from our chat room. Let's see. Raginator says, I never played the NES version. It wasn't until I had a PS3 when I finally played a home version of Qbert.
Sorry.
Dark Tetsuya says, I vaguely remember my first arcade game. I remember going to Bullwinkle's, and that was still a thing, and playing a few
different
games.
I love Bullwinkle's.
Like, I remember a Noah's Ark game randomly, though. There was a Noah's Ark game. I remember the Mineshaft here had it locally. That place was awesome when it was
I love Bullwinkle's. Probably better than Chuck E. Cheese.
I don't think I ever went to Bullwinkle's.
We never had
thing,
one
right?
where I lived.
Bullwinkle's was a Bay Area thing, right?
It was.
Yeah.
But I did remember, and to this day, I still suck at Frogger if I'm not wearing roller skates. But I would go to the Babaloo in Dothan, Alabama, when I was go there to visit my daddy and my granny. And the Babaloo was owned by a man named Bob and his wife, Lou. But Bob taught skating with my granddaddy, so he knew who I was and would always play the songs I'd ask. And but I would play a ton of Frogger and early pinball on roller skates. And it was the only way I could play certain things is on roller skates to this day. So just saying.
Good time. I remember playing Spy Hunter on roller skates. Anyway, well, since we're talking about old games, that actually leads into a little bit of the kickoff topic I want to talk about tonight. I do want to give a shout out, though, to PAX East. I was hoping to maybe get somebody on the show who'd been to PAX East this weekend, but my Twitter calls went unanswered. But to be fair, I didn't think of it until the last minute, and a lot of people are probably traveling back from PAX East right now. But if you did go to PAX East, I hope you had a great time. I haven't been in, when was the last time I went? 2014, I think? My years start to blur together. Whatever year the Snowmageddon was, like 2 weeks before PAX East, that was the last year I went. You know, it's getting to be a real crowded show, but it was always a good time. So, you know, hope people that went had a good time. So I just want to get that out there. But what I do want to talk about here at the top of the show, I want to talk a little bit about old school, and I want to talk about homebrew developments for old school consoles. And when I say old school, how about the Mattel Intellivision? Y'all remember the Intellivision? Because they keep milking the Intellivision later on for retro collections and all that, right? With the Intellivision Lives was a game at one point. And they had the flashback console. In fact, I think I actually own that one, the Intellivision flashback. Well, the reason why I bring back up the Intellivision is that just recently there was a new game released for the Intellivision. That's right, Princess Lydie. I hope I'm saying that right. But Princess Lydie is a kind of like a Snow Brothers, a Bubble Bobble-esque type of game that was released for the Intellivision. And so you can check that out. The game is freely available. But of course, you know, the developer would always appreciate a little bit of support if you do like that. The game was created with Inti Basic, which is a basic interpreter for the Mattel Intellivision. You can actually see, here's a little GIF here in studio of the game in motion there, so you can check that out. There's more information over at the Atari Age forums, atariage.com, and Bobby's asking for a spelling of that so you can Google it. Absolutely, it's Princess Lydie. Princess Lydie? How about Lydie? Because it has die in it. So, Lydie. So,
maybe it's Liddy.
Liddy? I mean, I almost said Lydia, but Lydie? Oh, well. Anyway. There you go. You can check out that old game. And why I thought I'd bring that up is kind of a two-part question here is that why do you think these old consoles still thrive with new releases and new games? What do you think possesses people to make games for the Intellivision when I would say very few people have those hooked up to their TVs anymore?
It's the big N-word, nostalgia.
Nostalgia? Nintendo? Nintendo nostalgia?
Just nostalgia.
Nostalgia. Something about that. Jamie, do you play any of these remake or I guess demakes, if you will, or old games on systems like Halo 2600? Did you give that a try?
No.
No. What do you think about the fact that new games still come out?
I had the Bayonetta down make.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
That was pretty fun.
That was very cool.
Fantaz says, make a new Grand Theft Auto for Atari 2600. Funny enough, that's actually how Retro City Rampage started. It was a Grand Theft Auto game for the NES, a D-make, and then it just kind of blew up from there.
Hmm.
I would love for them to do the, I guess, emulator that they did for building Breath of the Wild.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
I'd play the shit out of it.
That'll never see the light of day, but you never know. Well, let me ask, and speaking of, okay, let's talk about D-makes, because remakes are all the rage, right? We had Crash Bandicoot just got a remaster. There's another one I'm sure y'all are thinking of that we'll talk about a little later on tonight. Heck, even the Halo trilogy got re-released on the Xbox One, right? Actually, I think it was 4 Halo games that were re-released on Xbox One. So anyway, all that aside, what game do you think should be D-made? What game do you think they need to revisit and do an old version of for an old console? And I open this to the chatters as well. Halo 2600 would be an example of this. The Bayonetta D-make that they did to promote Bayonetta on stream, that's also another great example of that. What game do you think should be D-made? Final Fantasy VII for the NES as an example, says Bobby Blackwolf. That's another
maybe
great example.
Do Final Fantasy VII as a text adventure a la Gemstone.
Oh, a text adventure game like Zork.
Yeah, like Zork.
Okay, I like that. What about other? I think they should do a. I don't know why, but my mind goes to what's all the rage right now in gaming is the. I say 1 versus 100. The player versus, and I don't mean the game show, sadly, but the Player Unknown Battlegrounds and Fortnite, like that shit's all the rage right now. So I would like to see like a 100 versus 1 type of game on like the NES, like a party game. You have to have a lot of multi-taps.
So what was that like?
Hide and go seek.
It was something, I remember the name now. It was like Xenophobe? Was it Xenophobe? There was one that had like, it was a top and a bottom screen that you could see like, different things going on at the same
yeah
time.
Okay, so there was a game called Xenophobe, and it was actually three layers in the arcade because it was a three-player game, and it was a side scroller, and the thing that made that game very, you know, novel was that all three people were in the spaceport somewhere and all kind of like kind of like fighting. You know what game also that draws to mind? You know what game Xenophobe was a lot like? Spy versus Spy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember that one?
Uh-huh.
And that was just two people, but that was very much like a split-screen thing, and you would try to hide the booby traps. So, okay, I go with that. So, like, Spy versus Spy, but like 100 people. That would be fun.
Yeah.
There you go. Let's see. Looking in chat over at live.vognetwork.com, Alan Alchemy suggests Beatmania 2DX 2600 played with the paddle. Get it? Because it's a turntable and a button. I like that. That's a good idea.
DJ Hero has been demade. DJ Hero was.
DJ Hero was? For what system?
PC. They did like a, it looked like a NES version.
Yeah. You're right. They did like a promo thing for that. Jamie, were you about to say something?
Parappa.
Parappa the Rappa?
And
the
reason why I'm thinking about it is because there was the scene where he goes into the cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
And the worse you do, the worse the graphics get. You know, it degrades by 8 bits each time.
And I was gonna say, D-made Beatmania. That's basically the Game Boy Color version of the game.
WonderSwan version.
Dungeon Buster says, I'd play Final Fantasy 13 again if it was turned into a 16-bit Super Nintendo game, like their Lightning Returns trailer. You know, they did a little joke with Final Fantasy 14 and that as well, where they had a group fighting Titan, and it was really funny because the Dragoon fell off the stage because it's kind of poking fun at Dragoons being bad.
Fine, and I want Final Fantasy 14 done like Phantasy Star Online, so like maybe the Dreamcast.
Sia Tabiri in chat says, Tiger, I don't know if that's a throwback at the old LCD games, Five Nights at Freddy's. That's pretty good. I like that. And that would work. Like just the little hallways being on the LCD screen.
On the GameCom. Game.com.
I like that. Five Nights at Freddy's is a great choice because so many sequences in that game are already retro, like some of the storytelling.
Have you seen the trailer for Outlast for the Switch?
No.
So they did like a trailer and there's like this dude sitting in the cafe. All of a sudden there's like a jump scare. And he's like, and then looking around like everyone's like, what the fuck, dude?
Nice. Let's see. Bobby Blackwolf says there was also a Guitar Hero 2 that's played more like Audio Surf. Yeah, so that's okay. So any other D-makes you guys want to get out there before we move on with the game? I'm trying to think of like other stuff that's really big right now. It's funny because I keep thinking of Minecraft, but Minecraft already has that look of an old game, although it's 3D, so
what
it's not old.
What if Minecraft was done kind of like Doom style? Where it was all pixel done in 3D.
I was like, that's kind of how it looks already.
But,
like, not,
but it is
going.
Actually 3D. Like, all of your characters are just 2D flat.
Oh, okay.
You know,
I see
and
what
your
you mean.
Extra assets are 2D
it's,
flat.
It's Terraria.
Like,
but no, like Terraria is like side view.
Wolfenstein 3D is a good example because that was a 2D game in three dimensions.
Right, or like Hexen or Heretic.
Okay, I see where you're going.
You know, all those id Software games.
Mm-hmm. MXC brings up a good point. Brazil has a lot of D-makes due to the continued popularity of Sega Genesis.
And Sega Master System is the big thing. A lot.
I think they finally moved on to Genesis.
But a lot of games that came out on Genesis and later systems actually have Master System ports.
Yeah.
And you can only get them in Brazil.
You know, and sometimes we forget, you know, being that we're in, you know, the U.S. and so we're one of the countries that tends to get stuff right when they come out. You know, there's a whole globe here, and a lot of these countries in South America and other parts of the world, too, they don't necessarily get stuff like, you know, the PlayStation 4. Did Mr. Smush finally knock
Mr.
the mic
Smush
over?
Mr. Smush knocked it over.
All right, he had it. All right, anyway, so a lot of these other countries don't have stuff right away. So they have to kind of, I bet there's a big like secondhand market too. Like I bet like GameStop, like the overage shit they can't sell, they probably send to other countries or they, you know, sell it to places in these other countries.
Well, and the other thing too is that the cost of import for some of the newer systems was so great that it ended up being more cost effective to downgrade some of the games. I mean, like there's I think two iterations of Sonic the Hedgehog other than the Game Gear one that came out on Master System only in Brazil. You know, we've got, we emulated a few of them. I mean, they were pretty fun, but still.
Yeah. Phantaz in chat says, I know people from Brazil. Everything is so expensive there. It's ridiculous. $100+ for a game. Yeah, I'm sure with all the importing, you know, fees and then people want a cut of that and so forth. I'm sure it's, you know, if the company doesn't officially exist there, then you're basically paying import surcharges on everything. So I'm sure it gets crazy. All right. Anyway. Okay. That was a fun little conversation since I know remakes are all the rage right now to talk
it's
a little
bit
about.
Actually, speaking of Halo 2600, I did watch the making of that. Like there was like someone did a documentary on it about how it was a guy at Rare or not Rare at Bungie that basically like, I just want to mess around with making a game for the 2600.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what it is. And they end up just drawing Master Chief. Showed it to somebody like, dude, you got to make that. You got to make the whole game. And so eventually, you know, you worked on it with some other people to help, you know, build the sprites and everything.
You know, going back to the earlier question on why D-makes, I bet the challenge is it for a lot of people. Because, you know, programming an Atari 2600 game, like you really have to, you can't write bloated code.
I hope you know how to write assembly.
Yeah, right? You really, I mean, that's maybe a good way to, like, practice and stuff. Like, I would have no idea how to do that stuff.
Yeah, it's extremely challenging, and, like, I think it took the guy, like, a few years just to make it.
Wow.
It was just, it was more of just, like, I want to challenge myself to be able to do this.
But some people do it for the thrill.
Yeah. I'm not one of those people that will ever do that for the thrill.
Yeah, nope. Somebody in chat was saying very tongue-in-cheek that you should demake It's Time to Car, except you'd have to actually make it first.
Oh, it's already demade. It's the...
It's already in the trash compactor. All right. Let's talk a little more about some modern games. Maybe as we travel around our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we've been playing this week. And I say maybe because, I don't know, maybe Dark Sakura went on a retro binge. She does that sometimes. How was your gaming week, Dark Sakura?
I bought more than I played. I bought
That's just a Monday.
I bought Valhalla, finally. Or the VA11, whatever, how it's spelled. I also got Res HD, or the whatever the remake was on Steam, but I haven't played it yet. I went to the thrift store, found just a stack as tall as I am, practically, of Xbox 360 games in really great condition. Ask me later which Goodwill I went to. And a bunch of PS3 games. So I picked up Ni No Kuni for PS3, and I picked up an unwrapped copy of Titanfall for Xbox 360. It was obviously some bros collection because there were a lot of like Gears of War and all that in there. I played some Pokemon Go. I played a lot of Animal Crossing. We finally, I think, are done with Zelda. We loaned Julian our Wii U so he can finally play
it. That's cute.
Yeah. I played a bunch of pinball because we played a four-person versus game on Medieval Madness. And that was really fun. And played some World Cup soccer and played some Black Knight 2000. My Star Trek is broken.
Oh, no.
Upset. We might actually sell it. I mean, it'd give us like $8,000 back in our you know, bank, so that'd be nice. No, I didn't really play much else, I think, because it's just been... I had a Passover Seder to get ready for, so it was
crazy.
I heard
it was successful, so congrats.
It was. There were 13 people apart from myself.
Nice. That's a party.
As a party.
That is a party.
There were so many people stuffed into my kitchen.
All right, let me move on to Loki and your gaming week.
So I saw Ready Player One again.
Of course you did.
And no one's surprised.
Yes. I just saw by myself.
And Jamie and I are talking about going this week, and Loki's like, ooh, win. Like, of course you can come, Loki. Let's figure it out.
So I did that. And then I did play Far Cry 4, or 5.
I was like, I don't remember what number I thought we're 5 on. Was the new one. Okay.
Far Cry 5.
Does it have like a huge map or something?
It's a pretty big map, but I haven't actually been playing too much of Far Cry 5. I've been playing the Far Cry arcade stuff. So I've been doing that, and I've been doing this arcade hero mode, which is basically, hey, play these maps that no one plays so you can rate them. And they've all been terrible. But it's been just fun just going through the terrible maps because you also earn double experience. And the experience you earn in that and the perk points and stuff go into the main game too. So like it's an easy way to just earn, like, because the game's kind of hard right now. And so I just grinded that for a while, and then, oh, hey, look at all these perks I unlocked, and it makes the game easier when I actually go back and play Far Cry 5. But I did actually play some Far Cry 5 as well, because I was trying to get to this one waypoint on there, like this prison, and so I had to drive through all this area with a bunch of like bad guys and stuff, and so there was this hunter, was, you know, this hunting spot that you can go to, and so I went up to the hunter or whatever, and then she gets attacked by a mountain lion. And so then I waited for the mountain lion to kill her, and then I killed the mountain lion, and I got to loot both of them. So win-win. And then, of course, more DDR. I'm down 16 pounds now, and I've been playing...
Congrats, by the way.
I've been playing doubles again, so I've been playing mostly doubles and doing non-stops of doubles. I've been finding that doing random Caprice every time, which is that kind of, it's like you can see which songs they are, but it's different every time you play it. That's been all right, because anytime I try to do like random all, you know, it's just like, oh, hey, let's throw in Trip Machine Survivor. Okay, that's cool. You passed that. Now let's throw Legend of Max in there. It's like, what the fuck? I mean, seriously, can you just like mix it up a bit instead of boss song, boss song, boss song? So it's just, I don't know. And then I set it, like I said, I was setting up my arcade cabinet, and unfortunately the something with the graphics card, I think, is broken, so I get no image on the screen. Hopefully it's not the actual screen that's broken. I don't think so. I'd be more likely to believe it's the PC, because that graphics card is like wiggling all around in there, so I would not be surprised in the least that something's broken there. So I have to kind of play around, hook it up to some different monitors to see if I can actually see an image and try to troubleshoot that. But I just thought I would set that up, since it's just been sitting in a corner gathering dust. And eventually I'll probably sell it, because I did promise I would do that when I got the DDR machine. So I'll have to do that, because I haven't been playing it. And that's pretty much it.
Okay. Let me talk about my gaming week. Still some old favorites. Been playing, you know, Pokemon Go. Finally caught a Latios at one of the raids over the weekend, so that was good. Let's see. Also still playing Overwatch. Having fun with that. Been playing a lot of Mystery Heroes. Kind of getting back into that. And I feel like I'm just, like, doing better. Like, knock on wood. But I feel like I'm just getting some good matches. And I'm winning as much as I'm losing. And that feels nice. That's where I want to be, is an even win-loss ratio. Continuing to play some Heroes of the Storm and Final Fantasy 14. In some of the newer things that I've continued on recently, Ni No Kuni 2, I'm still playing. I have been streaming all of my gameplay. I'm up to about 8.5 hours in, and all of it's been streamed over on my Twitch stream, cheap plug, Rob Roberts. But I'm really enjoying Ni No Kuni 2. It is, you know, it's just, it's different from the first game. Like, the battle system is completely different. And, you know, there's this whole kingdom management system thing that kind of feels like a mobile phone game, but it's also not, because the things you do to grow your kingdom are not necessarily pay 99 cents. There's no money transactions in the game like that, but it's actually go do this quest, and then you'll get another person to join your kingdom. And I kind of like that.
It's like ActRaiser.
Kind of, in that regard, kind of. A lot of people comparing it to Suikoden, where you try to get all the people, convince them to join your kingdom. A lot of people comparing it to that. But yeah, I'm enjoying that and all the side questing, so I'm going to continue to stream that, play more of that. Having a lot of fun with that game. And I did not beat the first game, and I do not feel like my experience on Ni No Kuni 2 is diminished. I think it's very much like Final Fantasy, where it's just, you know, they are similar in their art style and some of the location names, but otherwise probably not connected. So there you go. Let's see. And other like newer stuff I've been playing this week. I was trying to think. There's one other game I want to talk about. I lost my train of thought. What else did I play this week? There was a new... I want to talk about DJ Max. Because I was just playing that earlier today, actually, before the show, because DJ Max Respect actually had some new DLC release for it. So now they have the Klazekwai edition. You can get all those songs, which is great. They have a Technica expansion pack. So, yeah, I'm loving that, because all those songs are really good, especially the Klazekwai pack. Like, if you have DJ Max, you want to get the Klazekwai pack. It almost actually makes me want to go back and alter maybe what I said a little bit a couple weeks ago on OLR about how DJ Max, I didn't really care for the music as much as I did in Beatmania 2DX, because these expansion packs and these DLC music packs are really good. Like, the songs are really good in the DLC packs, even though they're not necessarily licensed things. I hear that the developers are not super happy with the performance of the game in the West. I think you need to strongly consider, they're probably having to pay a license fee for some of these DLC, so you might want to consider bundling some of it in, or you might want to consider really dropping the cost on the base game. I think if the base game came down to $20, probably more people would pick it up, and then you could probably make some more money off these DLC expansions. That would be my advice to the developers. $50 digitally only. It's a lot to ask for what is essentially kind of a niche thing. I paid it because I like music games, and you know, I realize it's a very well-rounded game, but it might be a hard sell on a greater scale otherwise. So, that's I guess about it for my gaming week. So cool. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/OLR. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/OrangeLoungeRadio. As far as any housekeeping, we should be having shows pretty solid over the next couple months. We took a nice little 2-week break there, so we should be having shows right up at least through our 16th anniversary show in mid-June.
So just kind of a random train of thought here.
Yeah.
I know we're in April right now.
Mm-hmm.
When is the Indie Arcade? Because isn't that like right around this time?
I'm not sure they're doing it this year, actually. Uh-huh. I have not seen any of the promotion for it. You're right. It would have been around this weekend. I do know that Brie actually had a baby. So I think just probably, you know, I know she worked really hard to put all that together. Certainly Gabe did stuff too, but he actually released his game and so forth. So I think they probably just put it on pause for this year. As far as I know, I haven't heard anything official.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely fine. I forget about it.
It would have been around this time. Yeah. So I think it didn't happen this year.
Okay.
So we'll just hope it
comes
back.
It gives me more time to work on a game.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right. You can plan for next year. Absolutely right. Also, I know they had their collaborative office space that they had here. It actually closed.
Oh,
so,
that's sad.
Yeah, you know, I know it was. You know,
those collab office spaces are kind of hard. Like, where do you get the funding for that?
It can be. Well, I know the Hacker Lab downtown does really, really well. So maybe there just wasn't enough demand.
Well, they're
for the
also
thing.
Sponsored by my company as well, because our development innovation lab is literally across the street. So, yeah. I mean.
But we will be keeping our eyes on the Sacramento Indie Gamer Collective. And anything comes up that we need to let you all know about, we will bring it up right here on OLR. So, cool. All right. Well, let's get into some gaming news then for the night. And we'll start with you, Loki.
All right. So, Final Fantasy 15, the game that I have, and I literally stared at the title card a couple days ago. I'm like, I should go back and play that, because I've only played like 10 minutes of it, and I really should play it. And then I went to play Far Cry 5 instead, so, you know. But Final Fantasy 15, they were very dedicated to putting out DLC for the game, and that doesn't look like it's going to quit anytime soon. In fact, they even outlined some new episodes that are going to be coming out over the next year for Final Fantasy. So 4 new episodes are scheduled, including some that focus on Arden, Lunafreya, Noctis, and they said that a shorter side story episode as well for Irania Highwind. And they didn't really say what exactly, any details on that. But also, I guess, maybe some other multiplayer-focused stuff as well, some Comrades expansions. So lots of stuff coming out next year.
Well, I like that they're doing a DLC side story for Irania because, she was a really strong character that seems like she kind of got cut short in a lot of the corners they cut to get the game out in a reasonable time. And that's kind of what, bugs me about this whole, fact that they've got these, continuing developing things through 2019 is I just feel like...
So when's the Game of the Year edition going to come?
When's the game going to be finished so I can play through the story and get the story as it was intended? But I've been reading these hot takes on Twitter that are like, well, that's a very, it's a very, I don't even know what word to use. It's a very spoiled perspective because the developers are continuing to support the game all this time after development. And we should be thankful that more developers are pouring into their game and all this stuff. And I'm just like, come on. I fucking hate it when these types of hot takes are written in a way to make the other side feel bad. Like, you should feel bad for your opinion that you are hating on this stuff. Look, I bought Final Fantasy 15 when it came out. The developers got my money, so I can bitch and moan all I want on my Twitter.
If you don't want me to feel bad, you should be less of a cunt.
It's one of those things where I'm just like, okay. But I'm frustrated because I went and I played through this whole game, and then it's like, oh, we're going to go back and change chapter 13.
It's just, it's okay. A problem nowadays.
Then, oh, we're going to go back and change this and change it. It's like... Could you let me know when the game is just fucking done so I can play the game that's intended?
And that is the problem. I think with a lot of these big publishers out there, it's like, okay, you get this incentive if you release the game now, or hey, we're forcing the releases now to avoid any penalties, and then, or you could finish it and release it later. It's like, well, we'll just release it now. We'll patch it later. It seems to be the mentality of it.
It's the new normal.
And it's sad that it's normal because it wasn't like that before. You had one chance to get it right, and it had to be right, and that was it. But now it's like, fuck it, whatever. We'll just fix the bugs as we go along.
Or it's the other extreme, like Mass Effect Andromeda, where it's like, oh, it didn't do well. Drop it like a hot potato. The DLC that was expected, nope, canceled. We'll just write a book about it. And it's like, okay, well, that's a little... See, I feel a little differently about, DLC and the additional DLC and that stuff because with a lot of DLC, it's usually, an extra episode. It's a continuation. It's a separation, especially in Mass Effect. I thought Mass Effect did this very well, especially the last one they did for Mass Effect 3. What was that? Citadel was the name of that very last one they did for Mass Effect
3? The Citadel was fan service, the DLC.
It was, but I loved it because it really felt like this separate experience from the game that, enhanced the main game. And some of this in 15 they're doing, and I don't, that's cool, and I'm okay with that stuff, but it's like, the fact that they're going back and continuing to enhance things that are in the main game, that's the stuff that kind of bothers me, is it's like, well then, so you're not done with the main game. And it just kind of goes back to this whole, the game took years and years and years to develop, but we all know the real development didn't happen until the last 2 years.
And then it was fucking confusing. Oh, by the way, you need to watch this short film in order to finally grasp everything.
You don't. I didn't watch the short film. You don't need to watch it.
Then why even release it?
Some of it's like an extra thing, I guess. Some of it's incorporated into the game itself, I think. So there you go. Dungeon Buster in chat over at live.vognetwork.com says, speaking of Final Fantasy 15, watched some Tekken gameplay with Noctis, and it's like he totally belongs there. I'm not surprised to hear that.
In Tekken?
Yeah. Yeah,
Noctis is in Tekken?
Yeah, remember that? He's announced as a DLC character for Tekken 7. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I wouldn't doubt that he probably belongs there.
So anybody still in, or I guess, now that, was it, Dissidia came out, anybody even give a shit about that?
I tried the demo and I could not get into it. Or I shouldn't say demo, the open beta or whatever it was they had. I could not get into it. Like, it was kind of complicated for a fighting game, which is fine, and I kind of like could have stuck with that, but it just, I was thinking that Dissidia would be like a Tekken type of game with Final Fantasy characters. It's really not that at all. Yeah. So I don't know.
Is it too late to hold out hopes for an Urgates 2? I mean,
yes.
Oh, damn it.
I'm not sure that Dissidia is selling very well. I could be wrong, but I'm not sure it's doing very well. So I'm not sure Square is going to continue this fighting game thing. So we'll see.
You know where they should really throw in their efforts, though? Mm. I wouldn't be shocked if they don't try this, at least after Mario Kart comes out for iOS and Android. New Chocobo Racing game.
Oh, man, that I would be on board for. Heck yeah.
And I could see them doing that. Hey, Chocobo Racing.
Chocobo Racing would
be
badass.
Put it on mobile.
Hell yeah.
I mean, but, you know, hey, if that's what we got to do to get a new one.
Right.
Still, but, you know.
No, I get you. So, all right. Well, let's move on to something else. Although, I got to say, it's hard because when I do see people playing Final Fantasy 15 on stream, I'm always like, oh, I should go and play this again.
Or if they can at least make it.
And then I see a story like this, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it's not
make
done.
Like a decent VR thing, because that fishing thing is stupid.
Correct. All right, anyway, let's talk about Spyro. That's right, Spyro the Dragon is making a comeback. That's pretty exciting. Just in time for the 20th anniversary of Spyro, Spyro is going to be coming back in the Spyro Reignited Trilogy. The Skylander developers, Toys for Bob. This is what they're doing now, because I don't think Skylander's...
Yeah, it's done. Yeah.
So Spyro, which makes sense, because Spyro was in Skylanders, right? I think that did happen.
Yeah, it was Spyro in the Skylanders or something like that, or it was Skylanders, Spyro, something or other. He was in the very first title.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, he's not the focus anymore.
Yeah. So anyway, Spyro the Dragon, Spyro 2, Ripto's Rage, and Spyro Year of the Dragon are all going to be in this. New remastered graphics and music and all that available for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. The release date, September 21st. $39.99 if you want to pre-order it, and I'm sure any store is happy to take your money right now for that. Interesting to note, these original games were actually originally developed by Insomniac Games, who are now doing that big Spider-Man game that also got a release date this week, if I'm not mistaken.
September.
I think that's coming up later in the show. I might be spoiling that a little bit. But anyway, so that's something else to look forward to. So what do you guys think about Spyro coming back? I'm more excited about this than Crash Bandicoot, actually.
No, I've never played a Spyro game.
I played
really?
the
really?
Fun.
I was never into it.
I played like the first two, I think. They were They were solid platformers.
The first one was like one of the first games I bought on the original PlayStation. I think that's why I'm excited to try this.
Pretty cutting edge graphics for the time.
And that 3D platformer, like it was kind of the closest thing PlayStation had to like Mario 64, but it was different. Like, I don't want to compare Spyro to Mario for 64, but it was different.
It was a good game.
Yeah.
It's one of those games now that, like, in a lot of PlayStation games, man, you go back to them now, it's like, yeah, this didn't hold up that well, you know, but it's a pretty good game.
So, but do you think with the remaster and the graphics and everything, it'll hold up a lot better?
Yeah, I think it'll hold up a lot better. I'm not buying it, but it'll hold up a lot better.
I think I will. I'll buy it. Why not? Is it coming out on PC, though? They didn't say PC.
They didn't say PC, but it probably
that's
will.
That's too bad. It probably will.
Did the Crash Collection come out on PC?
I don't know if it ever did.
It might.
This is another series I haven't played.
Really? You haven't played Crash Bandicoot either?
I was never into it. I thought it looked ridiculous.
But there's also, and so the listeners might be thinking, what? She has, but you were very much a Sega girl, too. These games weren't on Dreamcast. Really?
I thought you were. Growing up, I had a Super Nintendo.
No, but this was after Super Nintendo. This would have been like your college years.
Well, no, I never had a PlayStation when they came out. Yeah. I didn't have access to a PlayStation until I lived with Candace, and I only bought one game, and that was Final Fantasy VII.
But you did have a Dreamcast, right, when it came out, right?
We had a Japanese Dreamcast,
and then we had 32X, right?
Well, Dan did when I moved out here.
The only remaster collection I'm interested in right now is whenever they announce a Ridge Racer remastered collection.
Give me R4.
New R4. I'm on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
R4 had the best soundtrack.
Yeah. Looking at our chat over at live.vognetwork.com, JD suggests hold out for Switch. You know, there's a lot of people that are asking, where's the Switch edition of this?
It's probably going to... I think maybe they just didn't announce it, but it's...
You think it's...
I think it's
something that'll probably happen too.
Okay, I have to say this now. If anyone hears burping noises in the background, it's me.
It's the cat. Yeah.
It's Mr. Smush.
No, it's because of my stupid digestion problems. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to burp. Sorry.
It's fine. Burp like a lady.
Girl. So whatever.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, Ridge Racer. That joke will never die. Let's see. Dark Tatsuya says, I thought I heard it got rated somewhere for a Switch version, but it wasn't officially announced yet. Yes, I do believe that was out there.
Was it this week? I think it was. Was it the guy from... I'm trying to remember which company. There's somebody. I remember because now we're talking about like Ridge Racer and stuff, and that made me think of CEO Kaz Hirai. And someone was actually following him and thought he was the actual CEO of, you know, Sony. And like, I never realized that that was a parody account or something like that.
Oh my God. That's was funny.
I want to say.
Took him this long to figure it out.
I don't remember. I think it was someone at like Take Two or 2K or something like that. I don't remember, but it was hilarious.
That's pretty funny. At least they weren't DMing secrets or anything like that. That's good. All right. Well, anyway, let's move on past Spyro. Darkstalker, what do you have for us?
Oh, those shenanigans. Shenanigans. So we now have a new fighter entering this brawl over the net neutrality repeal, and that is the ESA. So they have jumped on in. And they are joining the lawsuit against the FCC over the repeal of net neutrality. I need to write whoever wrote this fucking article that appeal and repeal are not the same fucking thing. Just saying. But they applied to join in, and their whole thing on that, and I'll just read the statement. Going into the important part. In particular, broadband providers are now permitted to engage in practices that degrade consumers' traffic. That, in turn, could have significant consequences for the enjoyment of multiplayer online games and cloud-based gameplay services, both of which require low-latency connections to support rapid and continuous interactivity. That's assuming that the intent is to throttle and have different paid tiers, which we haven't had anything lead to that yet. But I will say this, any industry left unregulated is going to take advantage of whatever they can to make the bottom line. We have seen this over and over in history. Do not trust capitalist, do not trust a capitalist society. They are going to fuck you for the money. That's just how it works.
Not that I want to say I'm for, or not that I want to say I'm against net neutrality, because that's definitely not where my head is at. But this is more coming from my brain is preparing for the worst. That this is the reality that we're going to have to accept, that this is, they're going to get their way, and that net neutrality is going to be gone. Is it going to be as bad as people think it is? Because there's a part of me that says that the consumers getting to regulate the market in some of the markets where there is competition, not here, unfortunately, we have one choice, that's it. But in some of the more competitive places, I would think that consumers aren't going to let these companies get away with charging $10 for a Netflix bundle and all this other shit. Like, I don't think it's going to get nickel to dime that way.
Except the thing is that the people who are part of the lawmaking process, mm-hmm, don't listen to their constituents. They listen to the money that goes into their pockets.
No. I know. But that's why I'm like, I'm just preparing for that this is going to be the way it is, because
I'm not speculating anything about the future. I'm looking at the past. Mm-hmm. And those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it.
Sure.
And we've seen what unregulated industry does. You know, we've seen, I mean, again, I brought it up before, but the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, where they locked women inside to make them work. Child labor. You know, an unregulated industry is going to do whatever it can to make the bottom line as cheap as possible.
Mm-hmm. Or, like, we should even remember, the same goddamn industry, not just several years or a couple decades ago. Remember Ma Bell? Remember when they had to break up the Bell companies because it was just this giant fucking monopoly for phone service?
Yeah.
Remember that? Because this is the same.
How is Comcast not at that same point?
It's the same goddamn thing.
Comcast owns, acquisitions haven't been as big as the whole Spectrum
Comcast
time.
Comcast owns a fucking network. They own NBC.
But the other ones you're looking at in terms of just internet, you've got that whole series of acquisitions done by AT&T.
Yeah.
You've got that whole series of acquisitions. Now, Time Warner and Spectrum have merged, and they bought Roadrunner. They bought all kinds of local ISPs. Mm-hmm. You know,
here's what's going to happen with the net neutrality thing. And I'm building a little bit on what Bobby Blackwolf said, so I want to give credit to him and his show, because he talked a little bit about this. I kind of think the data caps are going to be what comes into play with this, but in a little bit of a different way than what Bobby said. because as 4K gets more and more adopted, we're going to use more and more bandwidth, right? Like, you know, Comcast, which is the big provider out there, upped all those bandwidth tiers to 1 terabyte, right? 1,000 gigabytes. That's where we're at now, right? Well, as 4K becomes more and more the standard, and as the internet gets faster and faster enough to deliver 4K on demand, which is where we're going to be in 5 years. I mean, that's where...
Well, yeah, and the internet has to get faster because my service speed hasn't gone up.
So, but those data caps, they may not bulge. But here's where net neutrality is, that, and that whole thing, if it does not come back, here's where that whole thing is going to get you. This is what Comcast is going to do. I don't think it's going to happen quite the same way that Bobby was stating on his show, but what I think they will do, they're going to say, oh, but through Xfinity and our movies and our phone service and the things that are through Comcast, we're not going to put towards your bandwidth or towards your data caps. So if you use your 4K movies through Xfinity, what do they call the Comcast TV thing? Is that what it is? I don't know.
Yeah. X1 or whatever.
If you do it through that, it won't count towards the data cap because that's all. Because they kind of did that before. AT&T did that before.
I think T-Mobile does that right now, or Verizon. Somebody does that with
their streams. Oh, yeah. So that's the whole thing is that it's like, oh, if you stay in our ecosystem and you are buying your movies on demand through us and not through Apple TV or something like that, then it won't count towards your data cap. But if you go out to Apple TV or you go out to Amazon Prime and you buy it there, oh, that's going to count towards your data cap. That's where net. I don't think the market is going to let. I mean, I totally respect your perspective and everything. And again, I want to reemphasize, I want net neutrality to come back. I'm trying to deal with what is the future going to look like.
Well, even if it doesn't come back, I'm hopeful with this. It seems like a lot of like states are pushing for their own utilities for this stuff, which
you know, something
like
that's going to pass here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It really should be something that's like a utility that basically, you know, put it through the power system or something like that. You know, they have the whole, you know, internet over power type stuff.
Azette in our chat at live.vognetwork.com says, get rid of Pi. Yes, that smug motherfucker.
Like, I fucking hate that guy.
That the one guy that won't fucking leave Washington.
Well, he's in trouble right now for the whole Sinclair stuff. That's a whole other ball of shit.
That's a whole
other
Oprah.
But I'm just going to put it this way.
Yeah.
We have elections this year. There's another series of elections, of course, in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And there are enough people who hate those motherfuckers right now that we're going to see a big change. Make it happen, people.
You need to vote. If you live in this country, you need to vote. I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but you need to, and not just vote for whoever has a cool name. You need to go vote for, although, like, you know, if somebody, you know, named like Rob Roberts was actually running for office, I probably would do that. But anyway, no, seriously, you need to do your research and know, like, what are these candidates and, you know where they stand and know that they are, like, four things you want. Because when people don't vote, then people get a say that you may not want to have the say, but they have the say because they voted. So.
Well, and the other thing, too, is, I mean, we definitely, because I think this is a big part of it, this is the only reason I'm bringing it up, but we need to have caps on lobbying as well. You know, lobbying needs to be on equal terms without there being, because that's how we get, you know, I would be with 100% certainty that the whole reason net neutrality repealed is because the ISPs are paying lobbyists to make them think that this is right. They're getting a lot. They're being legally bribed is what it is.
And in chat, there's talk about the whole Oprah for president thing.
Oprah already said she won't do it.
No, look, no more celebrities in government. No more. Like, seriously, when was the last good celebrity in government?
There was, maybe Jesse Ventura.
Depending on where you are politically. I would even give, and look, as somebody who does lean left, I would not usually name Ronald Reagan, but I will give you that. I realize
Reagan
a lot of
fucked up the economy.
I realize a lot of people are fans. I will give you that. But that was in the 80s.
Reagan fucked up our economy.
Maybe Sonny Bono?
He did okay.
I was going to say, and I can't, Al Franken?
Well, until what happened at
Except
the end.
Except that he was completely terrible to women, but we need to just throw out the garbage.
In the scope of terrible to women thing, though, I mean, it's definitely,
well,
whatever.
Look, this is a whole other layer of the onion. I don't think we should be peeling back right now.
But the big thing is that fuck this drain the swamp bullshit. The swamp is in Washington. You need to throw out the garbage.
He was just repeating stuff that he thought people would like to see.
Throw out the fucking garbage.
Anyway, I totally appreciate that. JD in chat says, Rob, run in your local district. I heart that you think that. And believe me, I've given it thought. Because, and I've told this story on OLR before, but if you are not aware, my ex, before I was with Alan, who if you go way, way, way back on this show, you can probably hear on this show at some point. What you may not have known at the time is that my ex was a candidate for state assembly here in California, and he damn near won. And we should all be thankful he didn't, in retrospect.
I'm going to see this now. He didn't strike me as very smart.
So, but the one thing I learned from that experience, I'm not going to sit here and just shade my ex to no end.
Well, I'll shade him.
Go for it. But the one thing...
Not very smart.
The one thing I learned from that whole experience, you guys, if this guy can run for office... and get more votes than anyone in his party had ever gotten in that district. If that guy can run for office, any fucking idiot can run for office.
Just
look at the president.
Three words that you wouldn't think go together. All two of them could go together. Gay, Asian, Republican.
I didn't want to talk about it. All right. anyway. What else do I want to say about that whole thing? Before, not the ex, on similar to, oh, me running for office and why that won't happen. Because, unfortunately, there is too much of my life that's been recorded. Somebody will go back to early episodes of Orange Lounge Radio where we said stupid things because we weren't educated better.
That's why we just have to erase it from the internet.
Someone will just put you
doing Rocky.
They'll take shit out of context. But the thing is, I'm not... Also with Rocky, I'm not embarrassed about any of that.
But
Rocky gave an outlet to a lot of people, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, I'm just saying that it would be something that someone would try to use against you.
Somebody will find an early, early, early episode of this show or Under Station Live or something where maybe I said the R word or I said granny chaser, but with a different word. And now I know that that is not okay. Like, you know, I've been educated and that was a long time ago. But that's the disgustingness of politics is that people will dig up old shit.
See, this is the reason why I like the activism that I do. Because the activism that I do, I can be as loud and fucking obnoxious as I need to be. Although I try not to be loud and fucking obnoxious. I try to do things the right way. Mm-hmm. Activism is just as big a part as running for office. Because you need to get out there and make your voice be heard by the masses. And I don't care if people don't like, oh, this is not gaming, this is political bleh. This all affects your life, and as we can see now, it's going to affect your ability to game, you know, as what we see, you know, potentially happening with this whole net neutrality thing. It's going to be a thing. You've got to, I hate the term woke, but you've got to wake yourself up. You have to go out and be a part of life.
I do love these comments in chat. There's a great discussion going on in chat. JD says millennials will vote for a Rocky Horror person. That honestly is probably true. You know, that part honestly probably couldn't be held against me as much.
I would vote as long as you went into office in a corset.
Only with the theme playing. And let's see. Bobby Blackwolf points out there was a guy running for office in Florida that got destroyed by the opposition because of the in-character post he made when he was in a vampire LARP. But see, I would look at somebody like that and go, like, that person gets me in a way that, you know, curmudgeon-y frumble bump that's running against him doesn't.
I'm going to officially change my name to that.
You just found Loki's drag name.
It fits.
Rob's red now.
I just pulled that name out of thin air, but it works. It's fantastic. It's a perfect drag name for Loki. Curmudgeon-y Frumblebump, was that what I said?
Curmudgeon-y Frumblebump.
Anyway.
Rob.
I can't. All right.
Rob had to lean against the wall.
I do want to say Azette's comment because it's really good. The thing is, you have to own it. Hiding your skeletons is what gets you into trouble. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I say right here, maybe I will run for office someday. If somebody tries to use that old shit against me, I learn every day and I learn to do better every day. And so, yes, you will find stupid shit I said, but it was in 2004.
Raginator said Rob Roberts campaign slogan, in just 7 days, he'll make your district respectable.
I like that. Wait, hold on. Hold on, you guys. Did Raginator actually say something funny?
Yes.
Could we get that in the OLR wiki, please? It was Sunday, April 8th at 7:05 Pacific.
Get to it, Dark
It was Sunday, April 8th. Ragenator said something funny. Actually funny. Give him a round of applause, everybody.
Yay.
I'm such an asshole. S200 Matt in chat says, Rob owns all his skeletons.
But Rob, are you a bleached asshole?
Stop it. S200 Matt says, Rob owns his skeletons all the time. He says Super Metroid is the best game of all time over Chrono Trigger. You're right. I own it. I said what I said.
Everyone can be wrong.
All right. Anyway, let's move on.
The phrase goes, even the clock is correct twice a day.
Loki, get us to another story. Curmudgeon me, Frumple Bump, get us to another story.
All right, sounds good. So let's talk a little bit about PUBG. So PUBG and, of course, the company that makes it are going after some of these clones that are online. So one of these, I guess, PUBG Corp is citing, I guess, NetEase, because they're using and it's not even necessarily that they're outright copying PUBG, like putting it up there, you know, just changing the name or something like that. But basically because they use the word chicken dinner in their marketing and they have their similarities in...
Are they going to sue KFC?
And they have similarities in... They have buildings and landscapes and vehicles and weapons and clothes and stuff like that. And then also they were going after another company because they used a frying pan as a weapon in there. Dude.
Wait, wasn't a frying pan a weapon in Final Fantasy IV?
Frying pan was a weapon in like Left 4 Dead 2. They had it was in, I think one of the Silent Hill games had frying pan as a weapon.
Frying pans have a history of being used as weapons.
Exactly.
Yes.
And, or like, and should we go back to like
Dragonlance books,
like movies and stuff like that have used frying pans as weapons. So it's it basically. I remember PUBG Corp was also one to like. Well, we said that Fortnite's doing better than our game. They're copiers.
Waluigi.
I mean, seriously, they just bitch and moan. It's like, it seems like that they're not really, they don't have much of, you know, an argument.
They need to get out of the mindset of a trademark, a patent troll. They need to get out of the patent troll mindset.
Well, you can't trademark, you know, aspects of a game like this. Like, you can't trademark frying pan.
Yeah,
you can't trademark a frying pan because frying pan's a fucking frying pan.
Our chat room is lighting up. JD says Princess Peach uses a frying pan as a weapon. Sia Tabiri asks, are they going to sue Trixie Mattel? Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
And that, yeah. that phrase has been around for fucking ever. And I know it certainly is in
I remember reading the Dragonlance books ages ago, and one of the characters, her primary weapons were a potlid and a frying pan.
Tiger Claw Chat says, why not a steak dinner? Steak dinner is better than chicken dinner. I actually agree with Tiger Claw a lot on this. Steak dinner is better than a chicken dinner. Winner, winner, Ruth Chris gift card. Like, that's the game I'd play.
That doesn't rhyme.
Brad from Pop Culture says, they're going to sue Cooking Mama. You guys are on fire with the jokes tonight. What's up with this?
We got some sassy bitches in the chat.
Yeah, y'all drank a load of sass before tonight's show.
Should think of new catchphrases they could use in place of when we're chicken dinner, you know, like, I don't know.
Oh, maybe that should be a list.
We could just say, like, I want my baby back ribs, or, you know, or I feel like chicken tonight, or I don't know.
Loser,
meow,
loser.
Meow, 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 meow. I mean,
loser, loser, you starve.
It was shake and bake, and I helped. All right.
It's stupid. It's dumb. It screams of desperation because, I don't know, because just they're blaming everybody but themselves for the game, you know, not doing as well as their competition. And honestly, their competition just they took the formula that they have, which is almost like a genre now, and just kind of made it different and better. And sorry. You can cry about it all you want, but I don't think you have really the leg to stand on, legal leg to stand on for suing these people or, you know, trying to file a lawsuit against them.
Sorry.
Good luck with that.
I'm laughing because the chat room, Sia Tabiri goes, where's the beef? It's my favorite one so far for a replacement line.
Pardon me. Do you have any great boobah?
You guys are on fire tonight. SSG100 Matt says, you know what? Competition keeps people from resting on their laurels. They should embrace it and keep one-upping each other with innovation. This.
Exactly. They put out some more maps for the game that just haven't really been released everywhere yet. So I know they've got some new maps that are supposed to, like, you know, get things more interesting. But, yeah, you can't just, like, don't be like King, okay? Don't be like King and start suing people for using the word candy or saga. It's ridiculous.
I can't believe nobody for a jingle for winning one of these 1 versus 100 games has said, a Mr. Bucket, a Mr. Bucket. All right, anyway. Let's move on to another story that talks about... can you play PUBG on Linux? Does that game exist on Linux? What about Fortnite? Are these games on Linux?
I don't know, because maybe. I mean, they have the mobile versions run on Android and stuff, so... Maybe they have a Linux version.
From Ragenator, Wiener Wiener, Oscar Mayer Dinner. That's pretty good. It's pretty good. Anyway, so here's the thing. I want to talk a little bit about Steam Machines, because if you weren't aware, Steam Machines kind of came and went. Like, well, they're not gone, but
they weren't popular?
Yeah, they didn't really get adopted. And this was noted that, oh, Valve is no longer highlighting these Steam Machine hardwares on the front page of the Steam store. And this is saying, oh, this is the end. They're gone. Although Valve employee Pierre-Lou Griffas, because nobody has a title there, so I'm sorry if I butchered this guy's name, but he said in a post to a Steam community that the Steam Machine link on the Steam store front page was removed based on user traffic. He did acknowledge, Steam Machines aren't exactly flying off the shelves, but our reasons for striving towards a competitive and open gaming platform haven't significantly changed. Valve learned quite a bit about the state of the Linux ecosystem for real-world game developers out there. We've taken a lot of feedback and have been heads down on addressing the shortcomings we've observed. And also went on to highlight that Valve is continuing to work on the Vulkan graphics standard that does support Mac and Linux, and that's all in part to the company's effort. We have other Linux initiatives in the pipe that we're not quite ready to talk about. SteamOS will continue to be our medium to deliver these improvements to our customers, and we think they will ultimately benefit the Linux ecosystem at large.
When are they going to put out a new Source engine? When are they going to put out anything?
Like, what was the last game?
Dota 2.
Actually, probably VR games. Now I think of HTC Vive.
Oh, didn't they have a card game or something?
Dota had a card game, yes.
Yeah, the Dota card game.
But I think, to be fair, some of the HTC Vive experiences were where some of the resources was going lately. So I like many of you, would just like to see Valve do literally anything.
I just miss the old Valve where they put out games.
Yes.
You know, semi-regularly.
Bobby Blackwolf, I knew he would be on top of his VR stuff. Bobby Blackwolf says The Lab was the last Valve game.
Well, that was like
more of a
ages
minigame.
Ago.
That
like
was a minigame collection.
Maybe a couple years ago.
In gaming, yes. In gaming terms, it was ages ago, yes. So Steam Machines didn't quite take off. Does this surprise you guys or no? Why?
No, it doesn't surprise me, because small form factor PCs, they're just hard to... It's hard to make stuff really small form factor. And honestly, I think if you're going to game on a TV or something like that, it doesn't have to be that small of a case. Just make it look nice. I mean, that's really it. They have cases that are fucking huge, but it's all about thermals and shit. And also something like that, you want to be able to make sure that it's upgradable, because it is a PC after all. It was hard. I think what it was is they were trying to compete with consoles. And the cost of consoles is so low now, it's hard to make a PC that, you know, is going to be competitive price-wise.
Dark Soccer, do you have an opinion on the Steam boxes or Steam machines and why they didn't do so well?
Not really. I mean, people, if they want a console, they'll get a console. You know, I just...
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with this too. Is that I don't think Valve ever really said like, or well, not that said, but you know, I don't think Valve found the audience for this. Like, Valve never really figured out who's the audience for these boxes, because I feel like most people that want to do PC gaming have a PC. Most people that want to play on their TV have a console. So where does this fit in? Is it supposed to compete with consoles? Well, I would assume Microsoft and a lot of stuff that they're doing kind of cock-blocked them in that regard. Because Microsoft's kind of been pushing with their console in the PC space and trying to unify that. And I think this is a case where maybe Microsoft kind of has pulled that off a little better than Steam.
I still only use my Steam Link.
Yeah, I have a Steam Link and haven't used it yet. I mean, we used our old one once and then returned it. And actually needed to ask you how you had your setup that you don't get any latency. So
because it's wired, I use that gigantic wire and I plug it into the Steam Link. That's how I don't get latency. Yep.
Okay.
To register participation for this week's episode of Orange Lounge Radio at VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase battery.
Bobby Blackwell says Steam Link is better for playing PC games on a TV than getting a Steam machine, or rather, cheaper. And yeah, man, I paid like $50 for one. And Fantas says, I bought a Steam Link for $4 on Black Friday.
Ugh. Got it for a dollar.
My God.
$1. Yeah, that's how I got mine.
A lot of them, they're giving them away with different game purchases. Wow. So keep an eye out for those like wonderful sales.
Man, that makes me mad. All right. Let's move on. Another subject, Dark Saga.
Well, there are games that are now, again, banned in China, but they're taking it a step further. So basically, what happened is that there was a scene in, I think it was Call of Duty Black Ops 2, where you could drop a bomb in Tiananmen Square. And so the Chinese government pretty much, you know, did this big crackdown so that they would, I guess, ban the game again. But they're also now putting in surveillance in internet cafes to keep people from buying them and from playing the games. They're actually trying to stop all playing of banned games. Some of the other ones were Red Alert 2, Glory of the Republic, where you could fight against the People's Liberation Army. There's just a big list of games, but this more than 5,000 internet cafes now have to have a government surveillance system on all the computers. So one of the players is saying is that every time they play, there's this message that pops up to warn them, and that it's really just removed a lot of the fun from the playing, of course. But anyway, the way it's going to work is that any official will be notified if users are playing banned games in the cafes. So, yeah.
I guess there could always be worse laws than leaving net neutrality behind. But I'm kind of not surprised to hear that particular topic, the Tiananmen Square thing, is a very sensitive thing to the Chinese government. For obvious reasons, that's things that they're not exactly wanting their people to, you know, really
know
about.
We're heading that way, though.
Well, and that's, you know, we need to embrace and remember that in this country, we're able to share these types of things openly, you know, at least the way things are now. And I don't really think some of those fundamental American things are really ever going to go away. But that we're able to, you know, have that freedom of speech to be able to talk about that, to have this fucking show, honestly, and say whatever we want. You know, we have to be thankful that, you know, we have that ability, because not everybody in the world does. So as pissed off as we get sometimes the way things are, there are some pretty rad things about being an American. And the right to get pissed off about it is one of them. Anyway, let's move on. Loki, just a couple more stories before we get to the classic game of the week.
So, yeah, this is kind of cool news. So there was an announcement about Jackbox Party Pack 5. And one of the games that's going to be among that is You Don't Know Jack.
Yay!
And I like this. They have like this fictional company, I guess, that's kind of like the overlay for the whole thing. This binge pipe or something like that. And it's like this kind of
BuzzFeed type of thing. It
looked parody of like, you know, all the streaming services out there and content and social media and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I don't know what other games are supposed to be in there as well, but
they haven't announced those yet. They'll trickle that out over the coming months before the
But that sounds date. Cool that there's going to be a whole new Jack, You Don't Know Jack games.
So. Yeah, I forgot to mention in my gaming week, that was the game I was trying to think of that I forgot. But on Friday, I actually did a Jackbox stream. I guessed it on CI Live's Con Improv, which our old friend of the show, he used to go by DMN. He doesn't go by that anymore, but that's what he was back in the day. But John works a lot with this group, the Con Improv group, and so they had me on their stream on Friday night doing You Don't Know Jack, but the Jackbox Party Pack. And that was fun because somehow some of those games I just had never gotten around to playing, although I have all the Jackbox Party Packs. I guess I just never really had the people to play some of them. So we played that bracketeering. And we actually had 16 people in the game, and that was a lot of fun. So, and I actually won one of them. The bracket was, because it just keeps going like these against these, and you just keep kind of like voting on answers. And the bracket was best name for a CPR dummy, and I said Dummy McDummy Face, and I won. So, there you go. But anyway, so yeah, the Jackbox games are fun, and They've always been they've come on the show a couple times here at OR. Yeah. I think we know people over there that actually listen to the show. So hi guys, and good luck with You Don't Know Jack and Jackbox Party Pack 5. I'm sure tons of people are going to buy it because, you know, these games are great party games. They're great, like, you know, let's come together and do this. One thing I do want to call out, though, you know, in the interest of fairness, even though I'm big fans of Jackbox, they have made this whole, like, You Don't Know Jack is going to use mobile phones. And they've really stood by that, because one place where the last version of You Don't Know Jack, I think in the first party pack, if I remember right, first or second, I think the first one, where that one got a little bit of, you know, kind of criticism was that because people were using their phones to buzz in, it wasn't exactly accurate. And you couldn't really use a controller in this. Like, you couldn't plug in a bunch of controllers and have people buzz in on the controller, like when You Don't Know Jack was, you know, on the PC and stuff, where you had, like, something, you know, more tangible and wired to buzz in on. And so I thought it was interesting in some of the, you know, FAQs on this. They basically said, yeah, we've heard that feedback and we're basically not going to implement it. But to be fair to them, they have said that they are building this one with the mobile phone stuff in mind. So this is being built for the mobile phones. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, because, you know, especially I kind of thought we weren't going to see You Don't Know Jack again, because I kind of thought Trivia Murder Party was their new, like, You Don't Know Jack. And that game does work very well.
It is pretty awesome.
And that game was built for mobile phones from the ground up. So with that in mind, knowing that Trivia Murder Party worked out really well, that's why I'm kind of having an open mind with letting them do You Don't Know Jack again, even though they're not going to go back to a tangible controller for it. So we'll see what happens. I'm very curious. So let's see. Bobby said, oh, it was in the VOG Network review because he wrote it, because he didn't have them on his show, and said, you need a controller support, but then agrees that my friends only want to play Trivia Murder Party.
Well, it's too bad they couldn't, like, come up with a better way to, like, basically capture when someone buzzes in. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, grabbing, I know it's hard to grab server time sometimes, but maybe just grabbing the server time every so often and then calculating it also with your phone time.
Right.
So that you kind of get a timestamp, and then that way any latency that's in there, just reading timestamps. So that way latency shouldn't be a problem. It just may take a sec for it to clue that say that you buzzed in.
I honestly wonder if in the new You Don't Know Jack game, they're just going to get rid of buzzing in, because that's what they did in Trivia Murder Party. You don't buzz in, everybody answers the question, and those who get it wrong basically, you know, go to the death game or whatever, that whole thing.
Yeah,
right?
That was
so awesome. So I mean, what if that's their solution, is that the new You Don't Know Jack game, they're just going to get rid of buzzing in? It'll be interesting, but again, because I like Trivia Murder Party so much, and the other Jackbox games too. I know I keep talking about that one, but that one's the most adjacent to You Don't Know Jack and what it does. I think the new You Don't Know Jack will turn out just fine. So we'll see. Good luck to those guys. Look forward to it. And hey, if you want to come on OLR and talk about it, maybe drop an exclusive or two. I'd love to have you. All right, one more story before we get to the classic game of the week. And this has to do with, this is really cool. Actually, this is a classic all in its own. And a lot of the games that will be included in this could very well be classic games of the week. SNK has revealed at PAX East in a panel that they are releasing a 40th anniversary collection for the Nintendo Switch. And this is going to include games that are upscaled to 1080p. Now, even though this is SNK, this is not Neo Geo stuff. This is stuff that they made before Neo Geo was a thing. So this compilation includes games that will be released on the Nintendo Switch in fall 2018. It includes things like Athena, both arcade and home versions, Alpha Mission, home and arcade versions, Akari Warriors.
Fuck yes.
Akari Warriors 3. What was the name of the second Akari Warriors game? It's in there too. Guerrilla War, POW, Psycho Soldier, Street Smart, TNK3, Vanguard, Victory Road. That was Akari Warriors 2. Psycho Soldier, and last but not least, Crystalis, which is an amazing NES RPG. I can't believe there was never a second one. Or was there? Am I missing something, Dark Sakura? Did they try to do like a second Crystalis on Neo Geo?
I don't remember.
I don't think they did. I think Crystalis, I know there was a Game Boy release at some point, but that was just the original game. So I think they just didn't ever visit that series again. Oh yeah, Crystalis was remade for Game Boy Color with a bonus boss. That was it. Yeah, I do remember that. Anyway, with this collection, there'll be a limited edition there will be a limited edition version of this with a book and a soundtrack CD. So that's all coming out fall 2018. That's awesome. I'm definitely going to pick that up, shit, for Crystalis alone probably, but all those other games are really good too. I remember playing Athena on the NES, and I didn't hate it as much as everyone else did, although it was a little bit wonky. But Ikaria Warriors, all those games are great. This does beg the question, though, why wouldn't they just release these on Virtual Console? Now, yes, I know, LOL, Nintendo Virtual Console, but surely they would have just kept these in the hopper to release, like Crystalis, they would have just released on Virtual Console at some point, right? Or what's going on there?
Reasons.
We won't know until September.
I suppose.
If it ends up being September. I did notice, though, like, I bought, because I mentioned one of my friends, their daughter had a birthday, so I don't know how to shop for girls, so I know they had a Nintendo Switch, so I bought her a Switch game, bought her Scribblenauts, the new one. I don't remember what it's some party game, Scribblenauts party game. Anyways, but it did mention something on the back that, you know, that there may be a fee for online service or something like that. So they have that already, you know, in play that it's going to be, they're going to charge something for it later on, just when that later on is going to be.
All right, well, maybe finally we'll have some Virtual Console answers at E3 this year. But I'm really at the point where I'm like, I'm just not going to hold my breath anymore. It'll happen when it happens. Maybe never.
It's just the point. It's like, I think it's money left on the table for them.
I do too, but it's their choice because they seem to be making a lot of money anyway. Anyway, let's take a trip down memory lane. Every week, Dark Sakura opens the gaming vault and finds a game that she thinks, hey, you brats, you should be paying attention to this. But, in a twist, for the year 2018, once a month, she says, hey, why don't you use this peripheral to play a game? It's Dark Sakura's classic peripheral of the month, or...
Stop. What? Say it with me. Peripheral.
Peripheral. I just...
It's your Pischetti.
You learn to say things one way, and it's tomato, tomato, it's ingrained in your brain. Anyway, or as my dad always said, almonds, and that's the one that messes
me up.
Yeah, I know, right? Anyway, but in this case, it's peripherals
of the month. Because they're technically the same thing.
All right. So here it is.
For the same reason.
What did you pick, Dark Sakura?
I picked the Twin Sticks. Specifically starting with the Saturn Twin Stick and then the Dreamcast Twin Stick, which were both released simply for one game each. The Saturn Twin Stick was a peripheral designed to be used on Cyber Troopers Virtual On. So it is two joysticks that have fewer buttons, but each of them have a button on top. And it's set up, at least the Saturn Twin Stick is meant to look like the same style as a Virtual On panel. It was only sold with the pack that contained Virtual On, although the Twin Sticks did have its own own product code. It was released only in Japan, even though there was an English and European manual, and it led to then the creation of the Dreamcast Twin Stick. In Japan, it was released on November 29th, 1996, and retailed for 5,800 yen, so roughly 50-something bucks. I sadly do not have a whole lot about the specifics of this, but I can tell you that they're fucking fun to play with. Now, this goes on. I'm actually, to this day, still wanting a pair of Saturn Twin Sticks. But now I'll go to something that I do own, the Dreamcast Twin Stick, which was released to be used with Cyber Troopers Virtual On or Atari Otangram. And it is exactly just like the Saturn Twin Stick, except it's that plain gray and white Dreamcast with orange buttons on it. It does have a VMU slot, and it only released in Japan. Its release date was December 9th, 1999. And it also, even though it came out, you know, years later, it also retailed for the same price, 5,800 yen. It's you can play Virtual On with a controller, but there's just something different about playing it with the Twin Sticks that make the game so much more immersive and so much more fun to play. And we had a lot of time spent on Oratari Otangram. Rob, do you remember Game Masters that used to be on Greenback?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's where we got our Twin Sticks from.
Oh, funny.
It's also where we bought our Japanese Dreamcast. Mm. So just had so much fun with Virtual On, and I love fucking Virtual On, which I've done for Classic Game before. You can't mention Virtual On without eventually bringing up the Twin Sticks. So I've never played on any game other than Virtual On, so I do not know if it's compatible. But hey, It's fucking fun, and that's my my peripheral of the week.
All right, there you go. The Twin Sticks, twins, because there's two of them.
And plus, that music in the background is the best music in Virtual On.
It was really just an excuse for you to play Virtual On music here on the show, wasn't it?
Kind of, sort of.
That's all right. I totally support that. Anyway, we are going to take a quick break, but we've got plenty more Orange Lounge Radio to come, including your calls. Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype, if you want to give us a call a little later. And we're going to get as well to some rapid-fire news and some more stories. Sadly, no mailbag tonight, it looks like, though. At least when I looked before the show, there wasn't anything there. So I don't know.
I haven't checked yet, but
yeah, but
we'll see.
Just don't forget to send us emails in the future. Participate at orangelaunchradio.com. So we got plenty more Orange Lounge Radio to come when we come back. Welcome back, everybody, to Orange Lounge Radio. We're back live tonight with episode number 725 of our show, already in progress. And thank you guys, of course, as always, for tuning in and spending your Sunday nights with us, or whatever time throughout the week you're setting aside to listen to this podcast. We do really appreciate it, of course. Before we get into some rapid-fire news tonight, I have some late-breaking news, and unfortunately, this is another one of those, like, Lord facepalm type of stories. Overwatch League just suspended another player. This time, the Boston Uprising has suspended Dream Casper, was the name of the guy. He's 21, and this follows allegations he pursued a romantic and potentially sexual relationship with someone believed to be a 14 or 15-year-old girl. In a tweet, the Boston Uprising said, "We take all allegations of this nature very seriously, and as a result, Dream Casper has been suspended from the Boston Uprising indefinitely." The Overwatch League also putting out a tweet that they are aware of the situation as well. Dream Casper, one of the best Western DPS players in the league, who was unknown prior to the league debut and will no doubt slip right back into obscurity after this. That, by the way, for those keeping score at home, is the sixth player suspended by the Overwatch League for some sort of shitty behavior since it's begun. Look, I've talked a lot at length about the Overwatch League here on the program. I like that at least little baby steps, you know, they finally got a woman on the league, which is one. We got a token, but we can do a little bit better in that regard. And I think, you know, as we're starting to see the Overwatch League really kind of push esports to the next level, like, you know, ESPN ran this story I just read to you guys. So, you know, esports is becoming more and more mainstream. I have a feeling, and you know, I'm not going to try to blame Overwatch League for the shitty behavior. You know, shitty people are going to do shitty things, and I'm not sure Overwatch League, I'm not sure what they could have done to prevent it. It's just, you know, what their response is swift and mighty, and that's what they have to do. But my whole thing is just like, we're going to really see, you know, as the spotlight gets put on some of these people, we're going to really see some behaviors just kind of like, you know, I guess it's like Jamie has said before, taking out the trash. And unfortunately, Overwatch League's had a little bit of it, but hopefully they will just do better in some of their recruitment and so forth for season two. Alan Alchemy in chat, in all caps, mind you, says, "These dudes get paid thousands between Patreons, Twitch partnerships, and gaming equipment sponsorships to play video games. Literally all that is asked of them is to not be racist, homophobic, or date rape, and they can't do it." JD in chat says, "Here's the thing. A lot of professional athletes have a problem being decent people. Not raping, killing, and so forth. Whatever. Congratulations, gaming. You've arrived. Your athletes are just as overpaid to be awful people as mainstream culture." Azette in chat says, "But I'm famous and popular and can do anything. What are consequences?" So that's why I said, you know, I will give Overwatch League credit for bringing down the swift hammer of justice swiftly. Anyhow, let's move on to something a little more positive and some rapid-fire news and some things to look forward to in gaming. Loki.
All right. So, Chrono Trigger. We talked about the PC port. It was kind of not great. People didn't like what they kind of did to the graphics of the game. However, with that, you know, Square Enix has been working to address issues, and one of the patches that they will be releasing will be a patch that includes the original graphics for the game. So at least that's something. No word on when that is exactly going to, you know, make it there, but
so you can turn the filter on and off.
Yes.
Or what they're doing is they're quickly making another, but they're not going to tell you it's another filter that's just the regular graphics.
Probably.
Yeah. Anyway.
So. And then this was something that I saw kind of in my feeds because I do follow Angry Joe a bit. But if you're not aware, he worked on this along with some other people to do a Street Fighter tabletop strategy game, it looks like. And so basically it's got a miniatures game, I guess would be the best way to describe it. So it's a Street Fighter miniatures game, and the miniatures look pretty fucking awesome. It was on Kickstarter, got funded in a day. But if you are interested in it, you can check it out on Kickstarter. So just look for Street Fighter, the miniatures game. And yeah, it's pretty awesome looking. I mean, just these would totally be awesome amiibos. I mean, I don't know. I'm not really interested in a ton of miniatures games. It's been a while since I was in the miniatures scene, but it looks cool.
Phantasm Chat says Angry Joe was at PAX. Which doesn't surprise me. PAX is a pretty strong board game community. Didn't they do the PAX Unplugged? Didn't that happen this year in Pennsylvania somewhere?
I don't remember.
Philly or something? Anyway.
I remember being a kid, though, and having like the Street Fighter RPG game that I think was done by White Wolf.
Funny enough, Bobby Black Wolf. I was just about to read that. You're right. There was a pen and paper Street Fighter game in the 90s. It was by the same people who made Vampire, Werewolf, and Mage games. I interviewed the dude who designed it, so you can see that on a previous episode.
I didn't even look in the chat, but I had it.
Yeah, I remember that too, actually.
Yeah.
Some of the cool stuff they have in there, so they have like a destructible environment pieces and stuff, and then each of the play mats or whatever, you can do like different stages from the games. So they have like Guile's stage, and I know they have like the dojo and stuff. So
hopefully you can play music.
But can you say, too? Oh, my car?
I don't know. But yeah, they had with the game. I know that they have like six core miniatures that come with it. So Ryu, Ken, Chun-Li, Zangief, Vega, and Sagat. And then they're going to have an expansion with Bison and Akuma. And then so I know some of the like stretch goals were different characters from other games. So like the Alpha series and that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, I mean, looks cool.
Yeah,
looks pretty high quality. Hope it works out and gets released.
Yeah.
So, you know, Kickstarter is always very wary.
I understand. All right. Well, let's talk about original Xbox. Not the 360, not the Xbox One, but I mean like the Xbox first, the way back, direct Xbox, okay, going way back. Some news for the original Xbox. So, targeted to come out April 10th at 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. So maybe by the time some of you have heard this, and it's going to be about backwards compatibility for these games on the Xbox One. Now, there already has been a little bit, but we're going to hear about the next wave of this on the next Inside Xbox, because right now there's only 13 games that are supported by the service. So Microsoft said in a recent Xbox news post, one of our most common requests is for original Xbox backward compatibility news, and we'll be starting off the show with a big update on just that. So,
What? People want backwards compatibility? That's totally news to Sony.
Yeah. Make sure more people watch that than have watched anything before, because that's apparently the only way that Sony's going to get some of the information.
I've lost
this.
Hope in Sony, let's be honest.
Yeah. Anyway, this next website is not loading for me. I don't know if this is something that you can pull up.
Oh, my God, the backwards compatibility is not working on the website.
I know. Gosh. But anyway, I do remember it was something to do with SNK Heroines. The Tag Team Frenzy is coming out on the Switch on September 7th in North America and Europe. And I thought this was cool. They're adding Shermie as a character in the game. And it made me think of Darksakura's former Kitty. Is that where the name came from?
That is indeed where...
That is what I thought. So
my cat's name came from.
When I saw that, I instantly thought of you.
It did work on mine, because mine PC is beyond Windows.
Yeah, it's
XP.
Not on Windows XP.
It's
not
on Windows XP. So it is coming out digitally on PlayStation 4 September 7th in Europe as well, in North America and Europe. And they're going to have Shermie as a playable character, and she debuted in King of Fighters 97. And it looks neat.
All right. Thank you for the pinch hitting there with the correction on the platforms it's coming out for. Darksakura, what do you have for us?
Well, Konami has purchased a domain name recently for Goemon. So Goemon.com has been purchased. They haven't done anything with it yet, but maybe there'll be a new Goemon game on Switch. Maybe. We'll see.
Well, the Bomberman revitalization did very well for them. So, Goemon, I don't think it's a game people know as well here on this side of the ocean.
I don't know. I used to play tons of Legend of the Mystical Ninja.
Yeah, Legend of the Mystical Ninja was badass, though. That's one of those, like, if you haven't played this Super Nintendo game, you should check that one out, because it used a lot of the, like, the Mode 7 tricks and some of the retro shit. Like, you can play, like, the first stage of Gradius in that game, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then in other news, there have been some other speedruns announced for Summer Games Done Quick 2018, including Cuphead, Metroid Samus Returns, Super Mario Odyssey, and it's going to be happening on June 24th through July 1st. And hopefully, well, I'll get a chance to watch it. One of them, actually, I'm interested for in is a Final Fantasy VI speedrun that's glitchless.
So we'll one, yeah, it was all espers, too. That looked cool.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
I was going to say, the first thing I did when I heard that they announced their lineup, immediately looked for PT. Very disappointed.
To see if it was there and why isn't like, Flaco there?
Because they'd have to know the triggers.
I know.
As well.
I know.
But other games listed are A Hat in Time, Celeste, which I almost picked up. Divinity Original Sin 2, Iconoclasts, and a good bunch of others. Though it felt, I don't know, just they always need to end with Super Metroid, and last year's didn't.
Are they going to end with it this year?
I don't think so.
Wow.
But they also have a good backup list, I guess, for if they get extra time or, you know, make tiers or whatnot.
I always like the like races. Whenever they do races, it's awesome.
Yeah, the Super Metroid race was really fun.
But, yeah.
Like two people just like died right away.
How about a PT race? I'd be in for that. All right.
You'd have to know your triggers.
Or the swordless. I like the swordless randomized items. Legend of Zelda.
Those are fun.
Those are great. Yeah.
All right. Let's travel around the world and check out what speed games might be ran this week. New in retail and digitally.
There's actually some things coming out this week, so that's kind of nice. We have a game called Dark Rose Valkyrie on PC. A game called Extinction on PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One. Owlboy is making its console debut on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. A game called Project Nimbus Code Mirai on PlayStation 4. We have a game called Regalia of Men and Monarchs Royal Edition on PlayStation 4. Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice on Xbox One. Maelstrom on PC. Robocraft Infinity on Xbox One, Ease Origins on Xbox One, then we've got Death and Request on PlayStation 4, also coming out a little bit later in the week, Regalia of Men and Monarchs Royal Edition on the Switch and Xbox One, and then that's it.
Okay, let's travel over to Japan, where that same Death End Request game comes out in a regular and Death End box in Japan on April the 12th. City Skylines gets its PlayStation 4 edition in Japan also on the 12th. And a new release of Darkest Dungeon with Chinese subs comes out for the greater Asian region also on April the 12th. Checking the Vita, believe it or not, nothing this week, because the Vita is still supported in Japan. They still have a release next week on the 19th, just not this week. And then looking quickly at the Switch and the DS, looks like the Snack World, Jarre's Gold. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's a level 5 game. So, I mean, there's got to be something to that. Maybe that's something that will come out over here eventually. I don't know, but Snack World, maybe that's going to be their next Yo-Kai Watch. Who knows? But that is going to be out on the Switch, so that'll probably be a pretty big release, being that that's a level 5 game. 3DS doesn't really have anything this week, so otherwise it is pretty quiet over in Japan. How about Europe, Dark Saga?
A few things. We have, let's see, on the 10th, we have Extinction on PlayStation and Xbox, the new ones. Darkest Dungeon Crimson Edition for Switch. SteamWorld Dig 2 for Switch. That's on April 12th. On April 13th, we have Rick and Morty Virtual Regality. And that's it.
All right.
So this may be because I was looking ahead of in the month. In a couple weeks from now, of course, yeah, we have the Nintendo Labo stuff. Let's see someone speedrun that. And that includes building the peripherals that they need to
That would actually
game.
Be a really funny speedrun to submit. A Nintendo Labo.
Yeah.
Building. Yeah.
You have to build it and then play it.
That sounds like something out of Odyssey of the Mind.
Nintendo Labo robot kit. I want to see the speed run of that, including building the whole robot armor that you have to wear.
All right. Usually this part of the show, we would do the mailbag.
What mailbag?
The one that we have that's always open 24/7. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. But Dark Sakura opened it, and there was nothing there.
There were some moths.
The moths ate all the mail.
That's right. The moths ate all the mail. So there it is.
And then the dust bunnies ate the moths.
All right. We didn't have anything that we didn't read. I thought we had something we didn't read on the other show. I hope we didn't miss something. If we did, I'm sorry. Reforward it. We'll get to it next week. But participate at orangeloungeradio.com. So then we'll get back into some news. Loki.
All right. So apparently there's this study that is done with Take-Two Games saying that, or Rockstar North, I should say, that there's been quite a pay inequality issue with genders at the company. So they were saying that, I guess, that apparently women are paid 64% lower than men, while I guess men, or the median is 34% lower. So that they're saying that on average, the female employee makes 0.36 euro, I guess, for every 1 euro made by a man. So that's terrible.
Why is it so fucking hard to not pay women and men the same? Why is this so hard? Why is this a challenge? Now, I realize that you said euros, so this is not... This is a problem that goes beyond. We talk about it here in this country, but clearly this is a problem in a lot of other places,
too. Yeah, it's worldwide. But, like, what I want to know, and, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think that there is a problem with, you know, pay scale and making sure everyone's paid fairly. But is this... We're talking, like for like female programmers and, you know, male programmers, it's, like, same job? Or are we just talking overall in the company, you know, maybe... Women don't hold the same positions as men there. And that could be a whole other issue altogether.
Exactly. My brain went there, too, is that maybe they're averaging everything and you don't have as many women in leadership positions, which, don't get me wrong, is a whole other problem. But we need to get into, well, what is the root of this problem? These numbers because women are not in these higher positions?
Yeah. And trust me, like with Rockstar North, they make fucking Grand Theft Auto and shit. They should be paid handsomely. Mm. Everybody should be paying handsomely for that game.
Alan Alchemy in chat says, people are told it's rude to discuss money so coworkers don't compare notes. Also, there is a fear they will be resented if they make more, when in reality, the underpaid person is far more likely to resent their superior. And this, again, this is another country we're talking about. This isn't, but I mean, I'm not trying to deny it doesn't happen here, because obviously it does. But I'm just saying, this is, again, this is a problem in the industry, period. So...
Well, on top of that, too, I've seen it happen in many places of employment. But, you know, when you get a raise or when, you know, you get your hiring salary, they tell you not to tell anybody. And I think that lack of transparency for people. Now, I understand in some cases you get like a higher merit. For example, if you have a higher level of education, sometimes you'll get paid more than someone who may not have, like, say, gone to college.
And it could also be your experience, too. Like, if you're coming from a job, you know, that has a higher, you already have a higher salary in one place, and, you know, you might get hired on for more of a salary than you would if you didn't have a job with a higher salary, if they're looking at salary history or something, or how well you negotiate for your pay.
But there still should not be such a heavy disparity.
Right.
It's disgusting.
I wonder if, with the whole experience and everything, we're not paying now in this industry for a problem that's existed in the industry since the 80s and 90s, where women were like straight up excluded from a lot of elements. I mean, granted, there was a lot of women that did very important things in this industry, right? Like Roberta Williams, one of the first that comes to mind, like one of the all-time greats. But anyway, my point is that clearly you didn't have as many women in the industry then, so you don't have as many experienced people. Now, again, I'm not saying that makes it right. Please don't mishear me with this. But, you know, I wonder if, you know, in trying to look for how did we get here and how do we make it better, if maybe that's a cause, is that we're paying for problems of 20 years ago, which just goes to show you can't expect the future to fix everything. You got to fix things now because it's going to impact the future.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, like, even just in the gaming industry, I can't imagine, like, a position that would be better, a female or a male would be better at. I mean, it's just, honestly, I don't even really think about that when it comes to, like, games and programming and artists and stuff like that. It's just like, your talent is your talent, regardless of what your gender is. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how this kind of problem still exists in the world these days. But one note they did mention, though, they said part of the reason that Rockstar North is such an outlier is due to the lack of women in higher paying roles at the company. According to the database, only 8% of Rockstar North employees are in the top quartile of hourly pay at the company are women. And most of the women in the company work in lower roles at the lower end of the pay scale.
Hmm. All right. Well, I don't know if this is a problem we can solve here at Orange Lounge Radio.
Well,
but it shouldn't be this hard. B, you know, we have to put these issues out there and highlight them and point and say that is a problem in order for something to get done.
Correct.
About it.
And not to say that, you know, everybody should just jump ship from a company or something like that. But like a lot of people, and it doesn't necessarily have to be with discrepancy in pay. It could be just they don't like the, you know, not the ethics, but the environment of a big AAA publisher, or they're looking to be creative on their own or something like that. And a lot of people are spinning off in their own indie studios and being successful. So that might be an option as well. I mean, I don't know. But then again, it's Rockstar, and Rockstar's fucking Rockstars. So, you know.
Well, you know who has to be willing to bring up that there's an issue with how women get paid? Men.
Which is also stupid.
But
it just goes back.
Would you say that's true, though, what I just said?
Well, yes. I mean, but the thing is that goes back to, remember that thing where the male coworker and female coworker traded their signatures? And suddenly all the things that she had been complaining about, he saw happening. And like, oh, well, this is really happening. And no one believed it until a man said it, where we've been saying this shit for years.
Mm-hmm.
You should have fucking listened in the first place. Stupid.
All right, well, let's move on to a story to hopefully make us feel a little better, because this story involves, you know what, throwing it up and going outside. It's a story about Pokemon Go, which, you know, all of us here at OLR play in some capacity, some of us a little more than others. But anyway, Pokemon Go trying to do some good things in the real world here with an Earth Day celebration. They're encouraging folks to actually help clean up the world on April 22nd, which is Earth Day. Niantic has done a partnership with Mission Blue, PlayMob, and local nonprofits to encourage Pokemon Go players to go to select places and pick up trash and clean up the environment. If so many players do this, and they are watching, like, how many people actually contribute to this, then globally, players will earn boosts to Stardust when catching ground, water, and grass-type Pokemon. You know, earthy things. Depending on how many registered players are in the area. So that's pretty cool. You know, they did something like this in Ingress as well. They did the mission days, and I can't remember. Oh, God. They had a special name to them. Maybe Azette knows, because I don't remember what they were called. But Operation Clear Blue. That was it, right? But Ingress did something similar where, you know, they encourage these, you know, public service type of days, too. So Niantic has a little bit of experience with this. Also, speaking of Niantic and things that they're doing involving Pokemon Go, you may or may not remember, there's a class action lawsuit that was filed about Pokemon Go Fest. And this was because people paid money to travel, fly into, stay in hotels at the Pokemon Go Fest, only to have the game not fucking work. Now, people were already given, what, the cost of their ticket back and like $100 in Pokemon Go currency. Well, Niantic just settled a class action lawsuit over the festival, $1.57 million to settle this. There's going to be an official website that will open by May 25th, and this payout will help cover hotel and transportation costs. You have to read the fine print, though. If you were affected by this, you will need evidence that you were there. You have to have checked into the festival on Pokemon Go, meaning you didn't sell your ticket to somebody else. You have to show receipts if there were more than $107 in expenses, so be prepared to contact the hotel and get your folio and all that stuff. So, and this may not get reimbursed dollar for dollar, because lawyer fees are going to be impacted here and all this other stuff too. But you may at least be able to get some of it back, which I guess is better than nothing. So, little bad news there on Pokemon Go. And I really just don't see them trying to do something of this scale again. They've been having a lot more success with the local community days, I think, which we have a Marip event coming up this Sunday.
Well, it's good, too, because like I wouldn't want to have to fly all the way to Chicago to play like an event like that. I like that it's anywhere.
Well, at least with Ingress, they kind of travel around to a lot of different cities, although they seem to keep skipping Sacramento again and again, but that's another conversation. At least we had one in San Francisco, which is a reasonably close distance. And, like, they're doing one in San Diego, Las Vegas, Portland. So, you know, there's cities that we can get to in a reasonable amount of time and so forth. So, by driving or whatever. So at least they're kind of doing these sorts of events. But Ingress just doesn't have nearly as many people as Pokemon Go has, which is kind of how they can get away with it, and probably why they thought Pokemon Go Fest would not be any big deal, because remember, I missed an episode of OLR a couple of years ago because I went to Chicago to participate in a Niantic event, and it was fine. It was Ingress, not Pokemon Go, but it went off fine. Our phones worked. The only difficulty we ran into was that some dummy decided it would be a good idea to have a shard, which is one of the things you're trying to control, at Trump Tower. I said Tump. At Trump Tower, they actually had a shard spawn there, and this was like 2 days after those massive protests. You remember when there were all those protests after Election Day?
Yeah.
Yeah. There were all these protests going on, so the police were out. We couldn't get to this shard, so we had to sneak into Dunkin' Donuts across the street and do it there, and we got donuts.
Donuts and a shard.
That's right, donuts and a shard.
Win-win.
Actually, we lost the shard to the other team because they had way
they
more.
They also wanted donuts.
We had way more they had way more. Well, they saw what we were doing, too, so they figured it out. But they also had way more fucking people than we did. I remember my little team of, like, nine people, and we'd be standing there like, yeah, we're defending this portal, woo! And then it was a nighttime anomaly, right? So you'd see all these blue, which is the opposition color for me in the game, you'd see all these blue glow sticks and blue lights down the street slowly moving your direction as we're just sitting there going, ah, fuck. Like, there's nothing we're going to be able to do. We're not going to be able to hold it against that many people. But we had fun trying, and that's the important part. All right, let's move on. Darksagra.
Well, last but not least for me, there may be a potentially another Nier game. The creator of Nier Automata, that's Yoko Taro, and Yosuke Saito is the producer, and Keiichi Okabe, who is the composer, actually answered some questions, and of course the game came up quite a bit, and so while there weren't a few leaks out there, there was a point where Saito spoke possibly about returning to the series. So, and of course, it made everybody super happy. But the quote is, "I do think that we might be able to open the door in the Nier universe. I don't know how long it might take, but I do want you guys to look forward to that." So, they did say that they weren't super happy with the idea of making a sequel, but maybe something in the same universe. So there you go.
I know a lot of people really want to see that series continue in one way or another, so mm-hmm. This would be good news, I guess.
Yeah, I think it would be hopefully pretty neat. So, I mean, it'd be nice. I had the game on my wish list for a long time, but maybe now, especially if they're going to do more with it, I'll be interested in playing it.
All right, just a few more stories before we get to the Skype line at Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. But first, Loki.
So, you may remember that there was, last year kind of started this whole really terrible loot box thing where companies were kind of interjecting loot boxes in the games where it really didn't have any place to be. One of those, of course, that seemed to be kind of ruined by this was Middle-earth Shadow of War. So now, fast forward to this week, we get a comment from developers of the game, or I should say the publisher, Warner Brothers, talking about what they're going to do to fix that. And so they have decided that they're going to remove the loot boxes from the game. They stated, "The core promise of the Nemesis system is the ability to build relationships with your personal allies and enemies in a dynamic open world. While purchasing orcs in the market is more immediate and provides additional player options, we have come to realize that providing this choice risks undermining the heart of our game, the Nemesis system. It allows you to miss out on awesome player stories you have otherwise created and compromises those same stories if you don't buy anything. And simply being aware that they are available for the purchase reduces the immersion in the world and takes away from the challenge of building your personal army and your fortresses. In order to fully restore the core promise of the Nemesis system, we will be permanently removing gold, war chests, and the market from Shadow of War." Removing it on July 17th, of course. That's almost a year after the game came out. So really all this is to is try to save some face now that this stuff isn't selling as well as it used to. Because don't give me this shit that they didn't fucking know this ruined this from the get-go. Because people were fucking telling them every single day that it was. So well, don't be fooled.
It is nice, I guess, to see a lot of these companies are starting to go, whoops, we maybe need to do a swift turnaround on this stuff.
No, it's just the same face. They didn't feel bad for it. If they felt bad for it, they would have made act. They would have.
Oh, no, I'm not saying they felt bad. I'm just saying the reality is they realize they have to do this. All right.
I don't forgive them. I didn't buy the game, so, you know.
Me neither.
Skin off my back, so.
All right. Now, I got one more story for you guys, and I saved the best for last. Although, you have to file this in the category of rumors. Jamie, I want you to try to not get too excited at what I'm about to say, okay?
Try me.
But apparently, Nintendo has recently been revamping the Animal Crossing site. And in the revamp of this site, there's a lot of placeholders. Placeholders in places like the news page and the video page. So there are placeholders all over the place. In fact, the Twitter account Leak Review did a very detailed analysis about what this could all mean and how those all these pages with Lorem Ipsum all over it and stuff, where there's soon to be more copy for possibly some type of unannounced game. So Dark Sakura, you know what they might announce at E3? Amiibo Festival 2.
Hey, you know what? I still wouldn't be unhappy by that.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, that's right. You're like the one person I know that liked that
game. You know, they have those Amiibos marked down a lot. They're like $2.
I already own them all.
Yeah, I know. No,
well, you can own second copies.
Buy me some. No, I'm just kidding. So, I don't know. Again, it's a stretch. We're reading the tea leaves the way we want to read them. But, you know, it seems like
perhaps.
Wild World.
Perhaps they're not bringing back Virtual Console because they're going to include Virtual Console games within Animal Crossing.
Stop
like the
fucking
old
with my emotions.
Well, you know about Amazon France had Animal Crossing 3D as a placeholder for September 28th release.
Huh.
Yeah.
3D, like another, oh God.
They listed Animal Crossing 3D.
If they do another 3DS game, so help me God.
I actually wouldn't be mad at it.
I would. It is time for a fucking Switch game.
But, you know, it could just be a placeholder, but it was something on there, so.
All right, well, everybody brace yourselves for the upcoming Nintendo Direct. JD says, stop hating on the 3DS. I am not hating on the 3DS. The 3DS is a great console from the years 2006 to 2016, but it's time to move on. The Switch is here, yo. All right.
We'll see.
We'll see. Anyway. If you want to give us a call and yell about Animal Crossing or anything that's on your mind, the Skype line is open now over at Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. If you want to get through, again, that is Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. JD says, Nintendo is releasing stuff through 2019. Yes, I know, the Luigi's Mansion remake no one asked for. My Switch can't fit in my pocket like my 3DS can. Well, you just need bigger pockets. No, you know, JD, here's the thing. Fuck gender roles. You get to carry a purse now.
It's a fanny pack.
You get to carry a purse. No, not a fanny pack. You are going to carry a man purse with you, and you keep your Switch in your purse. JD says, I would lose it. Have you ever lost your purse, Dark Sakura? They're pretty. I guess.
Never.
Yeah, I guess if you. I guess it could be. You know, I could see like leaving. I lost my little gotcha, the little Pokemon Go auto catching thing. I lost that gotcha in a fucking lift. In Atlanta, when I was there, I had to buy a new one. Isn't that depressing?
No.
I know I'm depressed. All right, let's get to a call. We have a call on the line. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hi, this is Rage
Nader. Hey, Rage Nader, what's on your mind?
Not a whole lot. No, as you were mentioning towards the beginning of the show, you know, for the past couple of nights, you have been streaming Ni No Kuni 2.
Yes, been streaming Ni No Kuni 2, yep.
Yeah, in fact, I had caught the streams and we were chatting about RPGs. Now, all that being said, I'm going to make this call related to RPGs. Yeah, I would like to pose this to the three of you, and if Chad wants to answer too, by all means, answer.
Okay, what's that?
At least you specifically are known to love RPGs. Now, Case in point, Mass Effect 3, you bought that god knows how many times. That being said, what game drew you into the RPG genre first, and why are you such a fan of this genre?
What game, and I'm going to open this to all our hosts because I know you all like RPGs, what game got you into the RPG genre, and what was it about that game that you enjoyed the most? For me, it was honestly probably the original Dragon Warrior, because that's what they called it here, on the NES. I mean, that's the first one I remember playing that had the whole like strategy guide that came with it and everything. Because like I could go further back to like the 2600 and stuff like Adventure and things like that, but I mean, those were more like kind of like action-based games. I don't think you really got the role play in that same sense until we really got to, you know, the NES and some of those early games. So that was kind of the early one for me. What did I like about those games? Probably the fact that they were a little more story-driven, that it was an open world. Even though, you know, when you kind of look back, like a lot of those early RPGs, especially like the original Final Fantasy and stuff, they weren't as open as you think. You could go around one little part of the world, and then it was like, but to get to this world, you're going to need a boat. And to get to this thing, you're going to need an airship. And to this thing, you know, like everything is kind of tunneled in that sense, even in the earliest RPGs. But it did feel open. And what I liked about it is that if you were kind of struggling and having problems getting past a certain point, you could kind of level up your character and you could get past that point by just kind of like persistence pays off. You know, and you know, that's true of other genres of games, too. If you want to do good in a game like, you know, a platforming game like, I don't know, Spyro, like we talked about earlier. If you have a difficult level, you got to keep practicing and practicing and practicing. And again, eventually that persistence pays off. And I think in an RPG, especially, you know, those old JRPGs, you really felt that, which is why I'm really harsh on Final Fantasy VIII sometimes. Because that is one of the first games I remember playing where persistence didn't pay off. Because the enemies would level as you did, and there was this whole other system in it and stuff. And so that's why, and again, I'm not trying to open up this whole thing for debate again. It's not up for debate. How I feel is not up for debate. But I respect that there are people that enjoy Final Fantasy VIII. But for me, I just have a lot of negative connotations with it, because that is when I remember feeling like, oh, this is a RPG that kind of doesn't have a lot of what I've enjoyed in other games and so forth. But again, as far as Final Fantasy VIII goes, the story is good if you're, you know, willing to put up with the game mechanics to get there. So my problem was never the story. And as RPGs kind of continued on, I think the stories, especially in games like Final Fantasy, when we got to 7, but even 6, I mean, or, you know, when it was on the Super Nintendo here in America, when I was a teen, it was Final Fantasy III, right? Like, anybody my age that played Final Fantasy III in the U.S. at that age remembers that fucking opera scene. Like, you just, like, and that's, like, the earliest version of a Final Fantasy cutscene was the opera scene, and it was, you know, fantastic. Anyway, I've blabbed long enough. How about my co-host, Loki, your first RPG, and what made you enjoy RPGs?
Probably Dragon Warrior as well. I don't know. I don't remember a whole ton of what I played early stuff. Like, I can't think of a particular RPG. I just know, like, I used to play a lot of the Final Fantasy games. I remember Final Fantasy 3 or 6 was, you know, really good. But, I mean, I don't know. I know one of the first games I played, I know, was on the NES, and that was Dragon Warrior.
How about Dark Sakura?
I don't even fucking remember. I just always played them.
It's always been part of your...
I mean, if you want to really go for it, I could probably say Quest for the Rings. You know, the...
Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On the Odyssey, too.
On the Odyssey, yeah.
We played a shitload of that game.
So maybe you don't have that same recollection because you played D&D so much and paper-based games.
I didn't play D&D until I was older.
I meant paper games, though. Yeah. Like other stuff.
But I didn't play those until I was older.
Oh, really? I thought you'd been playing
those
a long time.
No, I've been playing the video game ones when I was a kid.
Interesting.
I mean, but I mean, if I was going to pick one, I guess The Legend of the Rings would be... Or Quest for the Rings would be... Mm-hmm. The closest thing to my first RPG ever, mm-hmm. you know, and I did a lot of text-based RPGs and, you know, I really can't put my finger on it, you know, it could just be because I'm, you know, heading toward my elderly years. My birthday's in 2 weeks.
Phantaz in chat says, I don't even fucking remember. Y'all crack me up. But you know, hey, you know what? We can only give you truth here at Orange Lounge Radio. And sometimes... our brains don't fucking remember. That's how
no,
it goes.
No, I'm I'm getting on in years.
Shake my cane. Some other random answers in chat. Bobby Blackwolf says, I had the AD&D games on Intellivision, but I also didn't get them. You know, maybe it may have been a little much for that age at the time. Let's see. Isia Tabiri says, the big one that got me into RPGs was probably Popolacrosse on PSP or Lunar for GBA.
I love Popolacrosse.
Let's see. Kossin says, I played Final Fantasy 1, and I was very glad to have the Nintendo Power issue dedicated to the game. Kossin also says, Crystalis. The thing about Crystalis is like kind of RPG, but there's this weird kind of like action element where it's kind of in a similar bucket to like the original Zelda to me. But certainly those games were just like gateway games, you know, in a way. But I think like would I have enjoyed the original Zelda as much if I didn't have Nintendo Power? I don't know. Like it would have been really hard. I'm not sure I would have ever gotten through the second quest without Nintendo Power. I don't know.
Remember how I got through the first quest.
I know, right? Like, we were just smarter then. I don't know how it is. All right, before I let you go, Spazinator, or excuse me, I always say your Skype name. Sorry, Ragenator, but when I look at the screen, it says something different. Ragenator, what about you? I'm flipping this question on you. What's the first RPG you remember playing, and why did you keep playing it?
It's weird for me. I had both Final Fantasy 1 and, you know, Dragon Warrior for the NES, but bear in mind, back in those days, my parents did all the game buying, and a lot of times my father would buy games with himself in mind, so I just ended up playing it. And I thought those two games I just listed were all right, but I truly didn't get into RPGs until I got my PS1 back in '97. I happened to go up to my local Toys R Us, and they had a kiosk and place for PS1, and they had a trailer for Wild Arms playing.
Oh, yeah.
Which included the opening cutscene. As a side for anyone that has not played it, the opening cutscene was fully rendered FMV anime, and I was just blown away by that. And I ended up buying the game, and once I got the game, I found out, hey, there's actually a good game behind this, not just a nice cutscene.
It's more than just a pretty face.
My second one, which I guess shortly after, was Vandal Hearts, which was put out by Konami.
Oh, I remember Vandal Hearts. I played that too, yeah.
Yeah, really great story, turn-based, kind of like Final Fantasy Tactics, and then what really blew me away, even more so, Final Fantasy VII. Cinematic, sweeping story, all that. And once I played that game, if I wasn't sold on the RPGs based on the prior two games, I was definitely sold then. I'd start buying RPGs left and right.
The only thing that pissed me off about Final Fantasy VII, when I first played Final Fantasy VII, and I played a lot of that game, I missed a lot of college to play Final Fantasy VII. When I first played through that game, the only thing that pissed me off is that through the whole beginning of the game, Aeris was part of my core party. It was like Cloud Aeris, and I think I was using Barret. So I leveled her up a lot. I used her a lot. And then all of a sudden, she was removed from my party. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Really? All that way? Yeah. Really?
Yeah, when I saw that one moment that you're referring to, I practically did a Darth Vader Revenge of the Sith moment.
Yeah.
No!
Yeah, right? Whereas Dark Sakura was over there going, yes! Chad Michaels on Drag Race when hearing that both queens would be saved that week. Yes! Yes! That was Dark Sakura.
That was me.
All right. Anyway, Ragenator, I'm going to let you go so we can get more calls, but thanks for the question. I appreciate that.
Have a nice night, old potato. No, right. Kidding.
You know you got busted for that. I'm hanging up on you for it now. Bye. All right. So the joke behind that is there was this character in Ni No Kuni 2, and I called her an old potato. She dressed fierce, but she looked like an old potato. And I was like, first person to tell me I'm that character or something is going to get a ban. And so, of course, Ragenator says something, so I actually clicked the button that timed him out. I thought it would only be like a 2-minute timeout or something where it would just shut him up for like 2 minutes. No, it was a 10-minute timeout. At least it wasn't a ban. But I made good on my promise. Anyway, lots of love I'm seeing right now. Dungeon Buster talking a lot about Phantasy Star in the chat as well. So a game that we kind of missed in mentioning our favorite RPGs. By the way, if you want to give us a call, RPGs or anything else, Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. You know, my first memory with Phantasy Star, though, besides like seeing it in a magazine and wanting to play it, because I basically was told as a kid it was Sega's version of Final Fantasy, right? Which we all know is a real oversimplification, but that's, you know, what it was as a kid. Okay, I wanted to play it for that reason. But honestly, my first introduction to Phantasy Star was Phantasy Star Online. And that game blew my fucking mind, like, when I played that on the Dreamcast. Like, that was the reason.
It was pretty awesome. Yeah. And I didn't play it enough.
Yeah, and that was only a couple years.
I had to go to the ER while playing the Xbox One.
God, I wonder where that game.
Oh, because you played too much.
No,
right?
No. Because I ended up having cramps that almost made me pass out.
Oh,
and thought
gosh.
I might have had something else going on.
I wonder where that went. I had that game because it was one of the games I got. Because I actually won. It's funny. I went to a Qzar all-nighter, and they had a raffle there. And I entered the raffle, and I won a Dreamcast. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I have a Dreamcast now, because I wasn't totally expecting to win anything. So then I remember buying a bunch of games, and one of those was Phantasy Star Online, but I don't remember where it is now. I have a lot of my other games. I found Tony Hawk.
Well, we wouldn't be able to play it online anymore anyway.
Well, I don't care about playing it online. I was playing it offline anyways. Cause
that's true.
Dial-up. Well, I'm not going to do dial-up.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I had it on Dreamcast, but it was the voice chat of the Xbox version that got me. Oh, yeah, that was magic. When you could suddenly, like, thanks to fast internet, you could use voice chat. It's like playing telephone all the time.
You should just bring it back. Bring it back as backwards compatible and then add the voice chat in there.
Don't. Do not. Especially after we just had that story about the Xbox backwards compatibility. Do not play with my emotions like that, because I will cry if that happens.
I'm sure the next thing they'll bring back after that is going to be Game Room. So, you know.
Oh, my God. Okay, now you're just making shit up. All right. one more shout out for our Skype line, Orange Lounge Radio, all one word, and you can give us a call. Do we have any last minute stories before we wrap up shop tonight?
No, it's been a slow week.
Yeah, compared to other weeks, it has been a little slower, probably.
One of the wrestlers in WrestleMania today dressed up as Sub-Zero.
Oh, yeah. That was all today, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wonder why it seemed like there were just a few less people than usual.
I haven't watched any actual wrestling in an age.
Why would they dress up like Sub-Zero?
What did Sami Zayn do during wrestling? That's the only one that I have to keep tabs on because I'm apparently his twin. I just have to learn to dance like he does. Anyway, DC Nate in our chat room says, what a disappointment. I don't know if that's about WrestleMania or what, but yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, I don't see our Skype lighting up, so I guess that means we're going to wrap it up here at Orange Lounge Radio. Thank you guys very much for tuning into our show tonight and participating with us. We appreciate all the feedback that we get from you guys in our mailbag. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. And we also appreciate 5-star reviews on a place like iTunes or Google Play or wherever it is you heard about this show. Those go a long way, and we really appreciate those reviews as well. We don't ask for your money. We just ask, hey, tell a friend about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but only if the voices are here to actually air them out. So anyway, that's going to do it for the show. I guess now we will go around and get everybody's final thought. Loki, you got the mic right there. I'll start with you.
My final thought is I'm hopefully going to work on my game this week. I don't know. It's been like it's however brain dead I am after exercising and work in a whole day. And being that I'm starting my new job tomorrow.
Congrats.
We'll see how that goes as far as what mental capacity I have left at the end of the day to learn more about programming.
My final thought is my eating noises have not been coming through on the microphone, but I've been chewing on some popcorn throughout the show, and I need to stop eating these popcorn kernels because it's dangerous. It's so terrible for your teeth. But you know what is the best? You know what's even better than popcorn is those kernels that are like half popped. Those are the best. Somebody should figure out how to sell that.
Like, you know what's the worst?
Pop popcorn.
You know what's the worst? Whenever I eat popcorn for some stupid reason, you get one of those kernels that just likes to get right in between your gums.
Oh, I have the solution for that. I bought this thing for my teeth called a water pick. And it's like, it was a good 60, 70 bucks on Amazon, but like, you don't have to floss ever again, because that's what this thing is a floss thing.
You
so
know
you,
what?
You fill it up with water, and it's like a water gun. that it's basically what your dentist will use on you, if it's right. like a lower version of that. And so if I get popcorn stuck in my teeth, I just go in the bathroom and like just spray
well, that
the
works
water.
If you're Done. At home when I'm normally eating popcorn at work. I'm like, oh. ah, crap.
You know what? Yeah, well, I have something even cheaper than that. It's a metal pick.
There you go.
Like a dentist pick, a real dentist pick.
All right.
And that fits in my purse.
Yeah, Costin says, have you guys tried using those plastic brush picks? Yeah, I used to use the little...
those things are a fucking waste of money.
The flossy pick things. I used them. You but can, if I had a purse, I would put those in them.
You can get a legit narrow metal dentist pick.
Oh, yeah.
And use that instead of floss.
Yeah.
And you pay $2 for it. Mm-hmm. And you can sterilize it. Mm-hmm. And keep it with you.
As long as you sterilize it.
And you don't have to fucking pay for anything else.
Those things can get nasty if you don't sterilize it.
Well, yeah but that's, again, why you sterilize. It's boiling water.
And an emergency and gouge someone's eye out with it.
All right. Anyway, Dar Sakura, I don't want to leave without getting your final thought. What is your final thought tonight?
Fuck it.
I like that. We'll see you next week. We will be back in 7 days to do it all over again. So, hey, thanks for joining us back here live or on our podcast feed. Either way you did it, we appreciate you being here, and we'll be back 7 days. Bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vogue Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.